Well, we have a lot of people now that run as Republicans. I'm not talking about this board, but this council. But a lot of people run as Republicans just because they can get elected as Republicans. And probably the same thing as Democrat. But I'd like to see the council be nonpartisan. I don't see any purpose to it. Except to me, I think it gives an advantage to the incumbent. Because, say, if you are on the council and you're a member of the Republican Party, excuse me, if you're a member of the Republican Party, although you might not even believe in the fundamentals of the Republican Party, but because it happens to be popular in this community, you have a little advantage of somebody that wants to run, maybe who is not really a Republican or a Democrat, but in order to win, you just about have to run as a Republican. Or, for example, in a general election of, say, the representative of our district, it'd be very hard to win as an independent. Now, although a person might like, for example, I would like to maybe run as a Republican. I'd run to win. I'd want to win, see, so I'd want to run as a Republican. But I might not necessarily believe in the Republican thing, which I don't think people should do that, but they do it. And I'd like to see it in the council. I just don't see any purpose of it, except it does help people who are elected to get reelected, I think. And I like to see, I'm a person who believes in term limits. So I don't think anybody should run over two terms. But, you know, even George Washington only did that twice, you know.
That's right. So,
I mean, we got people now, like, I don't want to call a name, but we got some people just want to inherit it, you know, and stay there forever and ever. And I think the object of our government is to have more people and different people and, you know, not professional politicians.
Well, the voters always have that prerogative, you know, to vote for who they want to vote for. That ought to be a term limit right there. Thank you, Jim.
Mrs. Dix.
Yes.
Good evening. My name is Ann Dix. I stay at 314 Johassa Drive, Aiken, South Carolina. The first thing I'd like to know, is there a piece of paper that we can read, other than what you read, Roger, that we can get further information on what this involves? There weren't any out there. If there were, I'd like to have that ordinance.
Sure, we could go ahead and get that for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and I stand here voting opposed to this amendment, and I think some of the ideas that were expressed, you know, voting is getting a bad reputation as it is, as far as my vote not counting. And as she said, there are individuals who preferably, they may say, you know, I'm a Democrat, may not agree with everything the Democrats say, but they portray most of my beliefs. And when they go in, that's all they want to see. They want to have the option to see. All I got to do is push Democrat. All I got to do is push Republican. And if you put them, list them down, and it does not say, and I know a lot of people will say, well, you should vote on the person. And that is true. You know, I never vote a straight ticket. But there are some people who do. And I think a lot of people would be deprived of their voting rights because it becomes confusing to them. And so I would, you know, like I said, you know, whatever the people say, but I think, as you say, partisan politics has been around since, I tried to think, what was it, the Whigs and the, I couldn't remember my history.
The Whigs and the Tories.
Thank you. I couldn't remember my history so well, what the other party was. And as far as participation, I think that is not a good reason, because if you want to become involved in the process, you will become involved in the process. If you want to run, you will get out there and you will run. And I think, don't we have one member on the council now who ran because he went out and got said I didn't like
no,
who it was?
He won. He beat that person. The person did not win who didn't like the result of the primary. The person that didn't like the result of the primary lost.
So I think
all of us are from a party. My thing is saying, if you want to become involved, all you have to do is go out there and get somebody to support you, saying that I'm willing to run it as whatever. Because you said, I think it was Dick Warwick.
Dick DeWar, he won.
He won the place. Mm-hmm. And that's what he said. He said, this is my option. Hey, I want to get involved in the process. So he went and he did the work that he needed to do. And then the voters decide.
After several elections.
And again, I guess I'm sitting back there mathematically thinking, if you've got eight people running, nobody gets a
majority.
Get a majority. Who do you decide?
The top two run again?
It's only going to be the top two that would win. Okay.
But then getting those people back to the polls to exercise their right. And again, that could happen anyway, but the chance under the current structure of that the probability is not likely with what Dick just experienced. I don't know that I can recall that kind of experience in an election you went through.
I would point out it was the first time the petition process was used, but it's interesting to note that the total number of voters in the second election was far in excess of the initial primary election. So the petition energized people on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
That would remain an option.
That's what I'm saying. That is a viable. That's what I see that as being, even though you have the two-party system, that is a viable option, and it has been proven that option works.
And actually, Ann, I use the Edison. I always include the Independent Party as well. You've got independents out there there's an opportunity to build that coalition and to run a candidate. It's amazing, I found in this community, the crossover votes.
Yes.
Okay. I have to tell you, my experience has been so different from what you're talking about, to be honest with you. As an incumbent, I was not supported by the county party. I mean, much less as the first time I ran. And neither was Dick. I mean, and we ran anyway because we believed in what we were running in. And we didn't run on the basis of county party support. We ran on the basis of what we believed was good for this city. And during the campaigns, I spent a fraction of what my opponent spent. But it goes to show that if you have a platform and you have beliefs and you say what they are, that people pay attention to that. And I think that when we have candidates for council, I want to know where they stand on local issues. I really do. And if they don't bother to find out what local issues are and tell me where they stand, then I've got a big problem with that. You know, I don't want them to just say, well, I'm the Republican candidate, because there are a lot of Republicans that I don't consider Republican at all. And I'm sure a lot of them think the same thing about me. You know, so, and I'm sure within the Democratic Party you have the same kind of diversity, and that's fine. In citizens, in meetings, when I was running, the people in the audience were for this. I mean, they wanted to know if I was going to support this if I were elected, because they obviously felt, in my opinion, this is my opinion again, that it opened up opportunities for people that weren't in the party system, you know, that this felt that they had a lot to say about, they were interested in the community, but they were not part of the party system. And they did not want to call themselves a Republican or a Democrat. And, of course, I defy anybody to say today what either one of them is at this point. I'd like to see more citizens feel not just enfranchised, but, you know, able to be a candidate. And I think that this could, now I'm not sure, but it costs so much money to run. And when you run, you've got to register for that primary in June. The election's in November. Okay, I know in the national level they think about it 4 years ahead of time. But normal people in the city of Aiken don't think about running 6 months ahead of time necessarily. Plus, some issue may come up that fires them up. That's how I got in trouble. I came to a council meeting and I didn't like what was happening, and so I ran.
I'm aware of that, Jim.
So that happens. Yeah. And I'm thinking if we have a November election, people are used to voting in November. You know, I worried in these primaries, well, and sometimes the parties don't have primaries anyway. They're done in another fashion.
But I thought there was always a primary only if there was only, if there was a, there was not opposition.
If there's no opposition.
If there's no opposition, we don't have
primary. There's no primary.
Okay. So there's no caucus. There's
right.
just no opposition.
Right.
Okay. But and I've heard so many people say, I try to encourage people to be candidates. When I talk to kids, I say, if your grandparents are yelling at the newspaper or at the TV or something like that, tell them to run for office and see what they can do about it, really, and your parents. And I just find that I think that it would be less expensive, frankly, to run for city council in a nonpartisan race. Now, I don't have proof of that. It is just my feeling that people would run more on local city issues. And I'm really interested. There are lots of people that I don't, John Breck being one, whom I can't begin to agree with on most national issues. But on a lot of local issues, we see eye to eye.
Amen.
I mean, right. Well, never mind. I'm not backing down an inch, by the way. But I'm just telling you.
But I guess the thing that I'm saying there is, as you said with your example and the other one, is that shows that the system isn't broken.
Right. So what are we trying to fix?
That's the thing I'm saying. It doesn't
show. All right. Now, don't take this person. Okay, y'all, don't get mad at me here.
No, I won't.
But, I mean, you've had no primaries because you have only one candidate. For how many years?
That's not true. I've had opposition in almost every election.
In the Democratic?
Yes.
But then were there primaries?
Yes.
I didn't hear.
I can't remember a Democratic.
I swear that I had, I'm sorry, I had two persons on the Republican side that filed against me.
Yeah.
One a write-in candidate and the other a ballot, but the person that filed as a Republican we thought was a Democrat, and that's the risk you run in terms of people being disingenuous.
Well, I just think that if they vote in November and we're local folk and we can say this is what I believe in, not just I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat, but this is what I believe in about local government, and doggone it, if they don't stand up for what they said they believed in, then we've got something to ask for answers about, you know. And I don't know, but I found the voters that I spoke to.
We can always do a recall. You know, I'm waiting for that. You know,
yeah. Well, why not? They started to try that too.
Because I agree. I think, but you know, I still, as there again, I guess primary for me is you saying that, but especially seniors. You know, some people, and like you said with that, you know, are you, you know, I know I don't agree with everything that the Republican Party stands for, but I can agree with 60% of what they're saying, and so that's fine with that, or I don't agree with that. And that's what they sometimes look at, that, and then to go down with names and that, not to figure out where, or somebody may say, oh, well, you know this person and whatever it is, you know. I just think that there is the probability that it would cause confusion. And my thing is, I think we need to be voting at 72-80%. You know, I just think as a nation, and I'll just practice as a nation, I think, you know,
it's horrible.
Ridiculous.
You're right.
You're horrible as far as voting is concerned. And I think you will begin to disenfranchise some people who would vote, because that's one, the senior citizens, that's one set of a group of individuals you can count on to vote, because they take that as a precious right.
You know, that's really something we need to look into in these cities, these large cities that don't, that have nonpartisan. Well, Charleston just had a nonpartisan.
I'd like to see some more data on that.
You know, Charleston just had a big nonpartisan mayoral election, and Spartanburg, right, is nonpartisan.
About six.
I mean,
everybody knows that Mayor Riley, Joe Riley, is a Democrat. Joe Riley's been there for almost 30 years.
But people vote for Joe Riley for a lot of reasons.
This is his ninth term.
He's one of my dear friends, so I know.
I mean, he's he's been a dynamic mayor. He's got very special ideas. He doesn't worry about conforming to the... Talk about, you know, when they were trying to make him run for governor, he said, nah, I'm going to be mayor of Charleston. This is what I care about the most.
Actually, he ran for governor, and he was defeated.
When was that? Not since I've been here.
He ran for governor.
Okay.
Okay, but that's, you know, I should say that.
Let me
I'd like to have more information.
Yeah.
And with mine is, you know, okay. That's what elections are about, is that whoever gets the majority, you know, I will conform with whether or not I agree with it or not.
And that is the one thing that concerns me, is that that was brought up to me today, and that is that you do have a lot of people that that are used to going in and hitting the D or the R because they trust that philosophy.
Yes.
And if they're made to read the names, that they may have some difficulties. Mm-hmm. But I guess that might be why the school board elections are usually kind of low. The turnout's usually... The vote, I've noticed that the vote count's usually lower for the school board, even though they run on the same year as county council and in other elections, that the total votes are usually lower in those ballots.
But they're all single-member districts, too, right, on the school board?
Even when they're contested.
But, I mean, they're still single-member districts. They're not at large.
But we are. Mm. I am, too. So is county council.
Hello, my name is David Allen, and I live at 108 Driftwood Circle. And it's funny, the two people, Mr. Breck and... they all say, oh, we're against this. I'm the Republicans. I found an issue that I can disagree with everybody on, it looks like. You want to know what a Republican is? I am. But I ran as an independent trying to get 15%, 10% vote. Why? Because we have a system that's broken. If you don't think it's broken, everybody that stood up here said, oh, we want more voter participation. We get 15, 20, 25%. We're happy to get 30% of people voting. Something is wrong with the system if people do not vote. If 30%, your city council race probably had the most votes in a long time. And what was the voter turnout in that?
A little over 30%.
30%. That was huge. Everybody said, wow, look at all the voter turnout, 30%. We have got to find a way to get people to vote. I think the elderly people are educated. They are the ones that vote. I was always told the graveyard is full of young, foolish people. The smart men lived longer. We have a system. The parties don't want it because it's power and money. Every one of you ran as a party member. But I've yet to hear anybody up here talk about troops in Iraq, abortion, or United Healthcare. We talked about an airport issue. Well, it was remanded to the next meeting. We talked about St. Mary's Church. We talked about roads. We talked about what's good for Aiken. I have yet to see anything that this party, whether it's Democrat or Republican, brought forth up here. What you're people that are interested in this town, in this community, and you're interested in these issues. You're not interested on who... on universal health care, immigration. Okay, well, immigration from Augusta to here, maybe, but not nothing else. We have got to find a way. So if you say, oh, this will turn people... I think it will turn people on. People want to vote. They want to say their thing. I was probably as strong a Republican as anybody in this room, and I asked for that. I caught so much flack from the party because I did not want to run as a Republican. I just wanted to run to bring forth issues, to talk about things. But nobody in my party, including my wife, did not support my candidacy because I was not running as a Republican. And I told them, it's wrong. I'm against partisan elections on the local level. When we get to state and federal, I'll jump on it as fast as possible as a Republican bandwagon. But when it gets down to paving my road, voting for school board, getting a city council, because you're the people that put people on boards that the church has got to go for, we have got to find a way to get participation. If we don't get 40 or 50%, What if we could get it up to 35 or 40%? We're getting 15 to 20% in primaries. Shane Massey won in a Republican runoff with about 10% or 15% of the vote. Yes, we have a system that's broken. Let's try something different. That's all I ask. Thanks.
Thank you, David. Anyone else? Okay.
Well, I would just say as a last comment that one of the advantages of nonpartisan, obviously, is it's significantly less costly, and it does, on that basis alone, it can encourage more candidates. The partisan system, and I was a good example, essentially. I had two separate campaigns by the time I realized that I had to start from scratch. Now, but the petition process is legal and it's in accordance with law and it's there, but it can make the election process more expensive. So it's tough. I agree with the issue on the seniors. There are a lot of people I talked to that wanted to know what party I was, and I said Republican. They said that's good for me. So there's a lot of, I can see it both ways. It's not an easy issue. It's easier than St. Mary's, however.
But we're not telling them. We're just giving the voters an opportunity to say what they would prefer. Mm-hmm. And as David said, if it gets people excited about participating...
Well, let me just say, when I ran last, it cost me $75 to file. So the filing fee is not I don't know if you said $400, $800 on the Republican side. Maybe you need to consider running on the DSAT next time, Mr. Huber.
Well, I certainly paid more than $75 this last time.
But. Okay. We need to do something with it, I think.
Actually, I've got strong feelings both ways as well on this issue. First, I was for it. Liz, I was against it. And now I'm for it again. But what I really am getting at, I'm wasting a little time, but I really think we ought to pass it on first reading, get it open to the public, and really see how it flies, and listen to everyone first.
Okay, I agree. Mm-hmm. Do we have a motion and second?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay. Opposed?
I'm just registering as undecided. I can't.
Okay. You're abstaining.
Abstaining.
Okay, well, it passes 6-0. With one abstain. Okay, next item, first reading of ordinance regarding process for allowing public input.
Okay. Boy, is this timely.
On first reading.
I'm going to go ahead and read this by title only. It's ordinance authorizing the Aiken City Code regarding the process for allowing public input regarding the consideration of an ordinance. This would allow you, if you pass this, so that you don't have to vote every time, to allow people to speak on first reading. So... for your consideration tonight, unless you want the public to speak on it.
Is anybody against this?
I'm not against it. I do have a question. You're going to love it. If we're going to have a public hearing on the first reading, then we need the signs posted on the property before that first reading, not 10 days before the second reading.
Well, again, it's a question of, are you going to call this a public hearing or just allow people to speak without having to suspend the rules?
Okay, well,
that's all they're doing. That's all
okay.
That's all we're doing. I'm not saying that's going to be at two public hearings.
But I do want to talk about the signs at some point in time, because I've had a lot of citizens complain that they didn't get to hear the discussion on the first reading when it was something they really cared about.
Okay.
But let's not do that tonight.
Yeah,
okay.
Okay. Does anybody want to speak about this? Okay, do we have a motion and a second?
Okay. Second, Mr.
Mayor. All right. Show of hands, please. All in favor. Passes unanimously. Okay. We added an item having to do with open space. That small committee. Mr. LeDuc, you want to?
Yes. We're asking you to approve going ahead and adopting a small committee that will work with Sandra Korblick, Harry Sheely, Von Stelgrove, and Karen Patterson would be working with Sandra Korblick to select a consultant to pull these plans together, to come up with the language and the procedures and how we need to move forward, should it be a commission or not, and also to start working with ACOLT and Aiken County to try to get them into the same process that we're working at. So we would like your approval tonight so that Sandra can move forward with this committee and start setting the steps for an open space within our community.
Okay. All right. Do we have a motion? Second?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we go forward with the program that's been set before us.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. All right. I think that's it. Looks like it. And we stand adjourned.
Gary Allen.
No doubt.
Welcome to our Aiken City Council work session, and to be followed, of course, by our council meeting. We're glad to have each and every one here. And on that work session, we just have one item to discuss, and that'll be having to do with open space, our open space plan. So, Mr. LeDuc, if you would introduce that further, sir.
Yes, sir. Last fall, Bill Reynolds was chairing a committee to look at open space within our community, primarily within the city and the area surrounding the city that's in our comprehensive plan. Based on a report that came back to the city, there was a suggestion that we go ahead and bring together all the information that we have received today, put it into one plan that could be attached to our comprehensive plan for planning in the future, that we would take an individual that would be dedicated to this process, and that we would come back with some direction later on as to what type of committee or commission or group we may want to have that would oversee open space acquisition and to facilitate any changes we want and how we might want to improve or to maintain those pieces of property. Mr. Reynolds has met with staff, the mayor did, and we had Harry Sheely also at that meeting. And with that discussion, we came up with several different recommendations that we're bringing to you. And if you feel comfortable with those tonight, then we will move forward immediately. Number one, they have suggested we go ahead and hire a firm to pull together those plans. Number two, they've asked that Sandra Korblick would have dedicated to open space up to one half of her time. Number three, that ACULT would assist us in open space acquisition and partner with other agencies like Aiken County and trying to get them all to work together. The group would then be meeting. They are recommending a small group made up of Harry Sheely with the Aiken County Land Trust, Von Snellgrove of the Department of Natural Resources, and Karen Patterson, who is an environmental consultant. This small group would work to hire that consultant, put the plan into action, develop a mission statement, and come back to you with any further information concerning the Open Space Commission. Those are our recommendations to you. If council feels comfortable, we feel this is what you have been asking for, then we will move forward immediately with that plan.
Okay. Thank you, Roger. Are there any comments by council? I would just like to say to Bill Reynolds, who chaired this committee, job well done. We all feel that way, and we've said it in one way or another, and we thank those who have been mentioned here for wanting to serve and bringing your expertise to this committee. We all feel it's very important to have green space and to have as much as we can and to save as much as we can. It's very important to us. So are we in agreement here? I think we need to vote on this issue, probably. To do this, to move ahead, do we have a motion and a second?
It's the work
to accept the recommendations for the members of the committee.
It's the work session, isn't it?
Well, okay, we can't do that. Do we need to put it on the agenda? I think we probably need to do that to make sure.
I'd like to ask if we move it to the regular agenda.
Okay.
I've talked with a couple of members of the Open Space Committee, and they were all in agreement that this is the way to go, and could not come tonight, but asked that Kay Shirley in particular called just a few minutes ago and asked that I voice her support for this proposal.
Okay.
By the way, all three of those individuals that were mentioned have agreed to work on that task force or that committee to move this on forward, if council so agrees.
Okay, very, very good. Then we'll add it to the agenda. Thank you for correcting. Okay. Well, with that completed, we'll move on to our city council meeting, and it is January 28th, and again, we're pleased to have everybody here with us. We appreciate your comments as we go forward and helping us make the decisions that we need to make. If you will, as we begin our meeting, stand for a prayer and a pledge of allegiance if you desire. Dear Lord, we thank you for again allowing us to come together as a city council and as a community of citizens. We thank you for our wonderful community that you give us and allow us to live in. We ask that you be with us this evening as we go through the agenda items, and we ask for wisdom and guidance. We want to make the right decisions. We know we all always won't agree on every decision that's made by city council, but certainly we can discuss the items, and we're pleased to have comments by everyone here. And we thank you for what you've done for us already in our lives and also in our community. And we give you all the glory and the power and glory and credit for the good things that we do accomplish in our community. But we couldn't accomplish it if we didn't work together, all of us. So we thank you again for the opportunity to be together this evening. And we ask these things in the name of your Son. Amen.
And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
Mr. Mayor, we need to add the work session item.
We'll add that under new business. Then, green space committee. Okay. Do we have a motion and a second? Then to.
I'll second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Do we have second?
Second.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Next item is the minutes, the consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of January 14th, 2008. Do we have a motion and a second there?
Move for adoption of the minutes of January 14th, 2008, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Okay. If there are no discussion, then hands of approval, please. So, all approved? Leslie, approved?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Passes unanimously. Under old business, appointments to boards and commissions. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. There's 10 pending appointments, and you have two before tonight. But before we look at those two, one of them, there has been a change to. And Councilmember Wells has originally recommended that Andrew Siders be selected for the Planning Commission. After further discussion, Andrew has asked that his name would be withdrawn at this point in time for this particular board commission, and Councilman Wells at the end here will go ahead and give you another nomination for that. So tonight before you is one appointment, and that's for Isaac Ruckert, who is in the audience tonight, to be placed on the Planning Commission and to replace James Holland with a term to expire in 2009.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Pardon me. We were having a discussion here. Where are we?
Okay.
Do we have a motion for this?
Mr. Mayor, I move that we approve Mr. Rucker to the to be appointed to the Planning Commission.
Second.
Okay. All right. Any discussion?
I'd like to introduce him to you.
Yes, please do.
If you please stand. He's on the front row.
Welcome, sir. Okay, do we show hands, please, all in favor? Okay, passage unanimously.
Okay, new appointments.
Okay. Huh? New appointments, anyone? Anyone have an appointment?
Mr. Mayor, I do. I'd like to recommend the appointment of Liz Stewart to replace Ed Waltz to finish out his term.
Again, I'm sorry.
Liz Stewart, to replace Ed Waltz.
We don't need to do anything.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Mayor, I'd like to appoint Mariella Brown as my appointee to the Community Development Board.
Mariella, okay. Okay. Any others? Okay. They will be on our agenda next meeting then for a vote.
And you should have those appointments here. At least I know with Mary Ellen, you have it in front of you tonight. And you have Liz Stewart. So both those are before you if you have any questions on it. So.
Okay. The second item is a second reading public hearing of an ordinance to annex 0.66 acres located at 2141 Whiskey Road to be zoned general business, GB. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by title only. It's an ordinance to annex the corporate limits of the City of Aiken certain property consisting of 0.66 acres of land, more or less, owned by TRC Aiken LLC and located 2141 Whiskey Road, and to zone the same general business GB. Last spring, you had approved giving to this property, which is at the corner of Owens and Whiskey Road, utility service. They are now prepared to come into the city. There already is a strip center, an office center at that location, so this would fit in very well with what you want to get done on Whiskey Road. And so for your approval tonight, this is the second reading of an ordinance and a public hearing for annexation of 0.66 acres of land located at 2141 Whiskey Road and to be zoned general business.
Thank you, sir. This is a second reading and public hearing. If anyone in the audience would like to speak on this particular issue, you certainly may do so. Just come up to the microphone. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve this on second reading.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 3 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend Section 523J3 of the Aiken Zoning Ordinance regarding demolition of a landmark. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'm going to read this by the title. It's an ordinance amending the City of Aiken Zoning Ordinance and the Design Review Manual regarding the definition of demolition. The definition of demolition is in Chapter 10 of the Zoning Ordinance. And at the last meeting, Council asked that we consider, let me read what the definition is right now, and then what you asked us to consider, and then I'm going to give you possibly a suggestion. Demolition, it's an act or process that destroys a structure or site in part or in whole. And so the key here is destroys a structure or site in part or in whole. What Council asked us at the last meeting to consider would be the complete or substantial removal of more than 40% of the footprint of the building's exterior wall. As staff started looking at the 40% and the exterior and how you would measure that up, depending on how you want to interpret it, one person can interpret the 40% and the footprint and the building wall in different ways. And then there could also be a situation where, let's just take the project that we have in front of us, St. Mary's, and if it turned out after the architect and engineer got in there and they found out it was 40.5%, we are passing an ordinance here that says 40%. I believe the intent is that to allow a reasonable amount of demolition that would not totally destroy or hinder a project like this or a building like this to go forward to do what they would like to do. So what I'd like to recommend, and if council agrees with this, then you would have to amend that sentence, that, again, the definition as it currently reads is any act or process that destroys a structure or site in part or in whole. We would suggest that you take out the words site in part. In other words, instead of just part of the site, demolition would be considered any act or process that destroys a structure in whole. So in whole would be the entire structure. With that, I believe that what St. Mary's wants to do, they can go forward. And the whole idea is to get it before the Design Review Board and to let them, as the body that you have put your trust in concerning historical structures and preservation in our community, to be able to make that decision. And this would give them the broadest a range of area to make a decision by changing the sentence, by taking out the word or site in part or. So it's just leaving it in whole. That would be our recommendation and suggestion to you based on discussion that we had with staff and that we had with you this past weekend. So for your consideration tonight, this is second reading of an ordinance. Thank you, sorry. In public hearing to amend Chapter 10 to be modified. Currently, the definition of demolition is set forth above, and the changes in Section 717K6A plus the associated change to the design manual. But again, if council would like to go ahead and make that modification, all you'd have to do is state that in the second reading change.
Okay. As a recommendation, Phil. Can we make that motion before the public discussion, or?
I think we can. I don't know why we can't. Except that the public may have some thoughts on it.
Let's open it up first.
Let's see if anyone out there has any thoughts on what we've just said here. This is a second reading and a public hearing of this issue. And if there's anyone would like to speak on this issue, you may do so.
Mayor, members of council, Bill Tucker representing St. Mary's Church. This will be the shortest speech you've ever heard from a lawyer. We heartily recommend these proposed modifications and would ask your favorable approval.
Thank you, Mr. Tucker.
Hi, I'm Martin Buckley. Live on Two Notch and Boardman Roads. I think that this is a very difficult thing to do, to say what is demolition, what is not demolition. A little demolition up to a point isn't demolition. The intent is to try to maintain the fabric of historic buildings or historic structures and the landscape in which they reside. Now, I don't know how you can say you're going to do it and not do it, or maybe sometimes do it and whatever, but I think that the intent is to keep all the important parts, perhaps keep everything. This should somehow be considered. There are some historic structures that only one or two little pieces are really worth keeping, a doorknob or something. There are others that are every bit of them is good and should be kept. I think there should be some mechanism for any time demolition comes up to somehow rate it or decide what could be done, what should be done. I don't think one size fits all. I think that there has got to be a way to do this. But I don't think a percentage is of floor plan or a percentage of wall or a percentage of anything else will fit every time. I don't think that just saying you shouldn't touch it is the right way either. But I think everyone should somehow be competently judged on its own and and then done. I'm afraid there's no easy way out on this thing. Thank you very much. I appreciate your...
Thank you, Mark.
My name is Margaret Marion. I live at 412 Windsor Place. Rather than change the definition of demolition, my suggestion is to just eliminate the sentence in the zoning ordinance that says no application for demolition of a landmark shall be approved. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Anyone else?
My name is Lucy Knowles. I live at 1141 Two Notch Road in the city of Aiken. I guess I'm very confused here tonight and don't understand why it is that you are considering changes to the ordinance when, if the next item is passed in the favor of St. Mary's, this change in the ordinance will not be necessary. Is that correct? No.
Not. Go ahead.
I mean, from my perspective, the way the design review manual is now set up, they are not allowed to consider the demolition of a structure at all. And with the definition of demolition as it is presently, if they were to even remove a brick from the structure of the building, that is by our ordinance considered a demolition.
Is this a landmark or just any building in the historic register?
It's actually any building in the historic register or in the design review district.
Okay.
What right now says you cannot have a demolition, and when our definition says demolition is defined as any act or process that destroys a structure or site in part or in whole, if you take a brick out, you've demolished the structure.
Up to now have not been legal, even though they've had a certificate of inappropriateness for
that may be a question I'd rather answer in another forum.
well, just a friendly question here.
That is something that, as this process has been going on, we have talked to council that we need to look at that process as well.
So
that's not an issue for
tonight.
There's
an internal conflict in the ordinance between this section, the demolition section, and the certificate of appropriateness section.
Correct. I agree with you on that.
Okay.
And we're making an effort to resolve this issue tonight.
Uh-huh.
Margaret's suggestion that we eliminate that sentence, which would, I think, have been, in retrospect, you're always wiser, which would have been preferable.
Mm-hmm.
If we do that, it's just first reading again, and then we've got another 2 weeks. And so my feeling, and I think a lot of the feeling on council, and don't let me speak for anybody because everybody's perfectly capable of doing that, is that if we have this definition of demolition, then the St. Mary's plans can go to the design review committee next session without even the main church being delisted as a historic landmark. We would only have to say that the rectory and the colonnade are not historic landmarks. That way, if design review saw fit in light of the plans that they have, that would be possible. If we've got this 40% deal, we're just in a mess completely. I don't think this is ideal. I don't think any of us do. We think there's much more work to be done on this, but I can't see. I think St. Mary's has done their due diligence on this project, and that it is our responsibility to see that this ordinance is cleaned up the way it should be, and that this listing of historic landmark is what it ought to be, which is an honor and something that we want people to think of that way and not as a burden. And I hate the precedent of delisting historic landmarks when they obviously are historic, because I don't know what we're going to tell the next person who has a building that is designated as a landmark and doesn't have plans like St. Mary's has, for example. But I don't see any reason why someone that owns a piece of property, I think council agrees with me on this, should not have the right to go to the design review board with a set of plans. And I think I spoke to this last session and said that indeed when I served on the Preservation Commission, that was the way it worked. And that's always the way it's been intended to work, in my opinion. This confusion with what was added in 1999 is just that to me. So it seems that if we say that demolition is allowed with the approval of the Design Review Committee, then that's that. And we can get on with this evening, and they can get on with their application next month. And I don't think it's ideal, but it seems like when we start looking at it, we see one thing, and then we see another thing. And that, at this point, I don't think that should be St. Mary's problem.
Thank you.
And that's why.
Thank you, Lucy. Thank you for that, Jane, for your remarks. Does anyone else like to speak? Okay, if not, it's back to City Council for consideration then. Okay, what we need to do is consider the definition, the wording of the definition first, vote on that.
Which we'd make a motion to remove the as amended.
Right.
And, which I would, I'm most pleased to do.
Yeah. We're going to keep this last part, right?
The last part being?
Plans for demolition on a site shall only be considered in conjunction with a certificate of appropriateness.
If I may, the way I would suggest council word the motion would be to, if this is your desire, to adopt the ordinance as presented on second reading with the modification to the ordinance that the word definition be, or excuse me, the word demolition be defined to read as any act or process that destroys a structure in whole.
I couldn't have said it better.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Well, I'll second that.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to that then. Okay, is there any discussion about that? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Okay, passage unanimously. Okay. Moving on. Item 4. Second reading public hearing of an ordinance to modify the structures designated as landmarks at St. Mary's Help of Christian School at the corner of York and Park Avenue to remove all structures except St. Clair's Chapel from the Aiken Historic Register. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this ordinance by title only. It's an ordinance modifying the landmark designation of St. Mary Help Christian Church located at the southwest corner of Park Avenue and York Street. And the modification is, as you stated, council voted at the last meeting to remove three landmarks or three buildings from landmark status, and that was the colonnade, the rectory, and the church or sanctuary, and to keep as a landmark status St. Clair's Chapel. We've had a great deal of discussion concerning this, and as late as this afternoon, we've been trying to digest if the church was modified, can it stay on as a landmark or not? In other words, the changes that are going to be made, how can this be reviewed by the Design Review Board, and under what appropriateness? There's a lot of things to consider, because one thing, this is never, we've never had something like this go before the Design Review Board before. I believe that and again, I'm not trying to put any words in anybody's mouth here, that everybody on council agrees that for them to move forward to the design review board, the rectory and the colonnade need to be removed from landmark status. And so the question comes in, what about the church itself? Should that remain as a landmark under the new definition, which would allow them to remove whatever portion they need to, and would the new addition or alterations, how would that fit under our current guidelines, or does the entire church need to be moved from landmark status? Those are the questions, and Mr. Mayor, I know that our two attorneys have been huddling, looking at some of this. Ed Evans has been looking at it, and let me just read what's on the agenda here, and then you can decide if you want to have one of them speak before we go further. But before you tonight is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to remove all structures on the St. Mary's Hill Christian Church, except for St. Clair's Chapel, from the designation of a landmark under the Aiken zoning. So if council goes along with the current ordinance that's before you, you'd be removing the rectory, the colonnade, and the church. If you wanted to modify any of those buildings, then you would have to go ahead and modify the motion when you vote on it.
Okay. Thank you, Roger. As Roger said, there's been a lot of discussion going on about this. We all want to just make sure we understood the rules and what applies to what, whether it's a landmark or whether it's not a landmark. So, Mr. Evans, Ed, where are you? I think he's prepared to give us a little bit more information to help clarify maybe some of our thinking that we've had.
Of course, I can't predict what the Design Review Board would do.
No.
I can tell you what's in the...
That's fine. Just what conditions under which regulations would they apply? For instance, historic preservation regulations or the overlay regulation.
There are three parts of the design guidelines for the historic overlay that I can quote to you from that I think the board would refer to, perhaps among others, in reviewing the application. And one is where the definition of landmark is located. And there's a sentence there that says, noticeable changes to landmarks should usually be avoided.
Again.
Doesn't say they can't approve it. It just says that noticeable changes to landmarks should usually be avoided.
And that's under the historic...
The historic overlay guidelines.
Okay. Okay.
Right. Also within the historic overlay guidelines, there is a sentence, and I'll just read it to you. Elimination of old features and materials can sometimes be minimized by limiting the number of openings between the old and new, and by incorporating existing openings into the design. Material loss can also be reduced by keeping the point of contact of the addition with the old building as small as possible.
Meaning perhaps you might have a hallway there with the door going from one building to another. Or in this case, you've got another building adjoining. Essentially, you've got to have one building, but it's adjoining, so you've got a wide entryway. Is that right, Ed?
That would be my interpretation of what that says.
Right.
You have an existing building, you want to put an addition on, rather than tying the two together, they're connected by a smaller connection of some sort.
But it has to be. Is it?
Well,
these are guidelines.
The words are should be, right?
Let me back up. This is under the additions section of the guidelines.
Of the guidelines to the overlay district?
To the historic overlay district. We're still in the historic overlay district guidelines.
All right.
But those apply only to landmarks, right?
No.
No. This is generally to an addition in the historic overlay district. Now let me just read this sentence. To avoid negative effects on buildings that contribute to the character of a historic district or site, The commission will not normally approve plans for an addition unless all of the following three criteria are met. And those three criteria are, number one, features and materials important to the character of the structure and its setting would be preserved. And under that number one is the wording that I just read about where you have an addition. The new building is connected to the old building by a smaller connection. The second thing that the second of the three things that the commission is supposed to find in order to approve the addition is that the design of the addition would be compatible with the existing structure and its context.
That could be height and width.
Correct. And the surrounding buildings also.
Does it say something in there maybe that there should be any higher or wider or anything like that?
Under that second point is a section, a small paragraph, size, scale, and proportion. The scale and proportions of an addition should be carefully planned so that the form of the old building is visible and not overpowered. Usually, the height and width of an addition should not be greater than that of the old building.
Usually.
And then the third of the three points is the new addition would be distinguishable from the old and would not create a false impression about the original or historic appearance of the structure. Now, those are just three things that I found that I think are relevant. There may be other things in the guidelines that the board might refer to.
Right.
These are relevant to a historic structure or a landmark, whatever we're calling that now.
Well, the three points that I just read are applicable to any addition in the historic overlay district. The first one that I read, which is under the definition of a landmark, is the one that says noticeable changes to landmarks should usually be avoided. That's just applicable to a landmark. But the other three points are applicable to any proposed addition.
Okay, even if it's in the overlay.
If it's in the downtown overlay district.
No, we're not talking downtown overlay. We're talking historic overlay. It's in the downtown overlay, it's a different set of guidelines.
How different?
They're less restrictive.
Well,
is that right? They're less restrictive if it's the overlay.
They are less restrictive.
How? Can you read them to us? Because I've never.
No.
Why didn't you read this to us last meeting?
I wasn't asked.
Oh, you didn't think it was relevant?
Well, let's not get into this.
Yeah. Let me bring up a couple of points. I did, in fact, ask the question last week specifically whether or not different guidelines applied to St. Mary's if it was a landmark and if it wasn't a landmark. But based on what you read, I'm not so sure I got a bad answer. Define historic definition for me. I guess I'm sorry, I'm the rookie up here, but there's some innuendos to this thing that I'm not quite seeing.
Define
historic district. Is it a historic district because it has a landmark in it?
No.
It's a historic district because some prior council has designated this area to be
Correct.
A historic district?
Correct. Council has created two overlay districts.
Okay.
One is a historic overlay district, which has been in existence since 1990. The other is a downtown overlay district, which was created in 2005
right.
or 6. You've got two different sets of guidelines. This is for the historic district.
Okay.
This is for the downtown.
So does that mean then that whether St. Mary's is or is not a landmark is irrelevant to the guidelines that you just explained? That those guidelines are going to have to be followed by the design review board whether we remove St. Mary's from a landmark status or not?
Okay. If it stays on the historic register and these still apply, then if it's a landmark, go back to that same wording I just read. If it's a landmark, the board will read this sentence. It says, noticeable changes to landmarks should usually be avoided. All the other things that I read are applicable to any addition in the historic overlay district, whether it's landmark or contributing or non-contributing.
But since this is not in the historic district, those other items may not apply to this.
It's in the historic.
It's a landmark.
It is covered under the historic.
Right.
It is in the historic overlay district. So these apply.
Okay.
Right.
So we don't have a choice as to whether it's one or the other. It's the blue book that's going to apply.
As of now.
Unless what would change that?
There is a choice. The choice is leave it landmark. The blue book applies with that statement that Ed read. And if it's not a landmark, the other policy.
You mean the district guide? The district lines change?
No, it's something is either on the Aiken Historic Register or it is not.
So I thought what you said was that the St. Mary's Church site was in the historic overlay district.
It's not in the historic.
Well, it's covered. It's on the Aiken Historic Register, which means it is covered by these guidelines.
But it is not in an historic district, other than because of its landmark designation. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Correct.
Thank you.
Completely.
Just like number 10 is, you know, number 10.
Yeah.
That itself, not even the buildings behind number 10 Downing, it was a landmark in itself, and still is. But it's not in a historic district.
So essentially, regardless of what we do, whether we take it off or leave it on, it's going to the Design Review Board.
Correct.
Okay.
But under a different set of guidelines.
I understand.
Which is not what we understood when we've been talking about this heretofore.
So how are they but we don't know how the guidelines are different?
They are less... The downtown overlay guidelines are less strict. You don't take into account, there is no landmark contributing, non-contributing designation in the downtown overlay.
But what about materials? What about the openings things? All those things you were talking that sounded so complicated.
If you'd like, I can read this to you.
Yeah.
Okay. Demolition of existing buildings is strongly discouraged. Consequently, the Design Review Board will use its authority to delay demolition of historic structures whenever possible to investigate means to save the building. However, it is recognized that in some cases, older structures may deteriorate to the point that rehabilitation is technically infeasible. In such cases, it is the responsibility of the property owner to demonstrate that rehabilitation is not appropriate and demonstrate a clear plan for the reuse of the site and any related new construction after demolition. Then, under guidelines, if an existing building's condition is deteriorated such that rehabilitation and use of the building is judged to not be feasible, a request for demolition may be considered by the review board. It is the responsibility of the property owner to demonstrate that rehabilitation is not feasible. If public safety is threatened, interim steps may be taken to close and stabilize the structure. Any requests for relocations to or from the overlay district shall be reviewed by the review board that's moving a building out of the district. Removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition for the purposes of these guidelines.
That's not going to work.
Any application for demolition shall include plans for the redevelopment of the site after demolition.
Mr. Evans, let me just interrupt and ask a question. When we say taking off a landmark, as the package originally came, we were talking about everything but St. Clair's. Now, how does St. Clair's interact with this? If St. Clair's is on, immediately adjacent, does that affect it in any way?
Should not, no. If they're not proposing any changes to St. Clair, it should not enter into the equation.
It's a landmark in the historic district.
No.
It's not.
It's not a historic district.
It's a downtown district.
By virtue of taking the church off. As long as you leave St. Clair's alone, when there's no intention of doing anything with St. Clair's, you can still go by the lesser guidelines. The less stringent guidelines, I'm sorry.
Correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
But are these guidelines less stringent? My point being this removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition. That's what we just got around in the other one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
I don't think there's any question here that there are stricter guidelines for landmark than they are a non-landmark.
in the
I mean, they're judged with stricter policies, regulations.
If these apply.
Yes.
Right.
And they do apply.
Correct.
If you leave a landmark there.
Correct.
And they don't apply if you take the landmark off.
Right.
Ed,
I talked to someone who I appreciate and I think highly of that's on the commission today just to find out, because I was so concerned about this difference too. And it's very clear, it came across very clear, that there is a difference, no doubt about it. And just the comment was made, stricter review of a landmark. There is stricter review of a landmark. I think it's logical. I think it's the truth. I think it's right. Because you've got the two different regulations.
Okay. Ed, are you finished, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, I'm finished for the time being.
Thank you. I just need to clarify in my mind with two books. You have a blue book and a beige book, or green and yellow book. Okay? In the blue book, what I heard you read indicates to me that they will not be able to do anything as a landmark. Not what they want to do as a landmark. Am I right?
Is that's something I can't answer. I mean, that's for the board to decide. What I read certainly raises questions that it wouldn't be a slam dunk. I mean, that they'd have some things they'd have to.
Okay.
Some issues that have to address, for sure.
Okay, it just says to me that you can't do it. If you use the yellow book, it's a little bit more lenient, and you can. But you can't use the yellow book as long as you are a landmark.
You can't use it as long as you are listed on the Aiken Historic Register.
Historic Register.
Right.
And the only reason it's listed is because it's a landmark. Is that true in this case? If it weren't a landmark, it wouldn't be listed.
Well, I mean, it was designated, 15 years ago as it was designated as a landmark at that time because that was the term that was used. We don't call it landmark today. It's called historic site.
Okay, we call it a landmark. That's what we've been calling it.
Well, it's got landmark significance as opposed to contributing and non-contributing.
Okay. The thing about
so if you don't want it to be affected by the blue book, you need to vote to take it off of the Aiken Historic Register.
But the point is that I really hate to not designate it as a landmark, but I want them to be able to go to the Design Review Committee. It's unbelievable that they cannot do that to me. It doesn't say, those are usually, I mean, there are all kind of mitigating adverbs in there that would not be there if there were no option for a different opinion, in my interpretation. I mean, it doesn't say you have to have a hallway between two sections. It doesn't say that. It says usually. I mean, I don't know. Just
Ed, what's the date on the blue book? When was that?
2005. It's the second version. We had one adopted in 1990 with the creation of the Historic Overlay District.
Mm-hmm.
This was redone in 2003 or 4, a new version.
Okay.
I just have one other question. What is your understanding of the responsibilities of the Design Review Board as it comes to evaluating parking under the Design Review Manual?
The board would, essentially decide whether this paving in a certain area that's proposed for the parking lot is appropriate.
Would they be empowered to evaluate the capability of parking in adjacent streets to accommodate the new structure?
No, it's purely a design issue. Is that paving on this piece of ground appropriate there? That's all they're evaluating.
Okay, so this will go through the entire process with no evaluation of parking issues created unless they're structural.
Correct, because there's no required parking in the downtown business zone.
I understand. Okay.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Now that we've got that squared away, we can go to our second reading here, and if members of the public would like to speak, you may. Mr. Tucker?
Phil Tucker again on behalf of the church, and I need to start by first thanking you all for the extraordinary amount of time and effort and concern that you've put into this on behalf of the church. We do appreciate it. We know that you're trying very hard to be fair and to make the level playing field that we keep asking for, and for that we're very grateful. One housekeeping matter, I believe in the ordinance itself and the first reading we talked to, also the land is included in the ordinance to remove, but I think in the summary the word the land got left out, but the physical, the dirt underneath the buildings is also supposed to be removed from the registry.
The ordinance says in section 1, the Aiken Historic Register is hereby amended to reflect that the land and all structures on the property identified in Exhibit A except for St. Clair's Chapel are removed from the Aiken Historic Register.
In the summary and the captions, though, that it didn't specifically say that, so I just want to make sure that we're on the same wavelength.
And all the summary was doing is reflecting what the Planning Commission and the Design Review Board recommended.
I understand, but it hadn't been stated tonight. I just want to make sure of that.
Good point.
Thank you. As to what is being discussed tonight, and I know that this was a topic of discussion over the weekend at your planning retreat, and that that even tonight, before the meeting, there are these issues raised, and I go back to what we said 2 weeks ago and what Father LeBlanc spoke to very eloquently, and that is that we acknowledge that we have a very special building in St. Mary's, and nobody is suggesting that it is not the case, but we also use the idea or the example of St. Thaddeus, which is some 50 or 60 years older and is not on the historic register, and therefore they have a little more latitude. They would come under the beige book as opposed to the blue book, to Beverly, to answer your question. Okay. And I hope we've gotten the clarity that we were looking for, at least what we've been operating under all along, and I think all of you have, but it sounded like it got a little muddled tonight, is St. Mary's is not in an historic overlay district. It is in the downtown overlay district, but it is an historic site, and it has the landmark designation to it. So it's an isolated site as opposed to being part of a general district where the entire district is subjected to the historic guidelines. I think that what has been suggested tonight and what Mr. Evans has spoken to goes right back to what we were saying before, and that is, and nobody is suggesting that the church is going to have carte blanche to do whatever it wants to, but we have been extremely concerned that even if the rectory and the colonnade and the dirt were removed and the church were left on landmark status, that somewhere down the road, even as well researched and as methodical as everybody has been about this, that there was going to be something else that would jump out to prevent another roadblock to having a fair hearing in front of the Design Review Board. And I think that tonight you've had a great illustration of the fact that, and these are guidelines, but they yet are certainly things that the Design Review Board will have to go by when that day comes, if that day comes, and I hope that it will. And the point is that you've got all of these other things to deal with. I think that it's clear to me that notwithstanding the fact that if you remove the landmark designation from the church building, that it still has rather stringent requirements. It's not as stringent as a landmark, but it's certainly not carte blanche. It has certainly got a lot of teeth in it as far as what they have to do to satisfy the standards of the Design Review Board. And I think for most of the at least two of the three things that Ed spoke to, that I would have no problem with it. Probably the biggest problem that I would have is the suggestion, and it would be a suggestion, that the break between the old and new be with some corridor or whatever. Well, obviously, that stops us dead in our tracks because we're talking about an extension of the sanctuary, which would be a uniform extension back from the existing sanctuary, and we surely don't want to have a corridor or revolving door or something like that there in the middle of the sanctuary. That would be a challenge, I think, for having mass with that. So I can just see there being other issues, and none of us here probably know what all of those are tonight, but the cleanest way and with the most clarity is to go ahead and pass on second reading what you passed on first reading, which is the removal of everything but St. Clair's Chapel, and let us have our day with the Design Review Board, and it may be more than one day with the Design Review Board, to try to work out something that is acceptable. But you've said it repeatedly. You said it 2 weeks ago, and I heard it said again tonight. This is the body you've put your trust in to make the decisions, and these are very subjective decisions. They're very esoteric decisions that have to be made, but this is the forum for that to be done. What you're doing tonight is the procedural backdrop, so to speak, to get us to that point. And the cleanest, simplest way to do that, and I understand the reservations of removing a property like that from the status, but I think the cleanest and simplest way is please pass what you passed on first reading, which is the removal of everything but the St. Clair Chapel, and then let us go take our plans to the Design Review Board and hash out something that's going to be acceptable to that body. But I, again, thank you for your hard work and your sincere concern about not only this, but the broader applications that all these things have. What you just passed as far as the definition of demolition obviously shouldn't just be about St. Mary's. It's about a lot of things in the future, and I think that I agree that the getting into the 40% rule would be a nightmare for both staff and council and the Design Review Board, and I think that you've gone a long way to clear that up. I would get one more lick in for maybe returning to Chapter 5 and looking at that sentence again sometime in the future. But in any event, thank you so much for your consideration of our request.
Thank you, Bill.
Martin?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm Martin Buckley. I live on Two Notch Road. This brings up a couple of very interesting questions. If landmark status could be perhaps optional, maybe it should be optional for everyone that's got it or wants it. If I wanted to be to have landmark status, let me have it. No fooling around. And then when I want to quit it, I'll do that. But which brings me to the point of our historic ordinance. Maybe we should just change the historic ordinance to historic suggestion and be done with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Martin.
My name is Martha Whittingham. I live at 175 Branchwater Lane, and I'm a member of St. Mary Help of Christian Parish. The gentleman just threw a kink. I had everything I wanted to say concise, but he mentioned something about I'd like to be on landmark status, and later I wouldn't. If you look back, I believe St. Mary's didn't request this themselves. So that's an important issue, but most of your landmark buildings that you're talking about are finite concrete objects. Old banks, commercial buildings, Hopeland Gardens, famous houses. There are only two churches listed as landmarks, and a church is much more than a building. A church is a vibrant living community which gathers to worship God. You have one rule that was specifically mentioned. I don't remember. It must have been in the blue book. It talks about somebody being able to, if you can no longer, the word wasn't refurbished, or if it's no longer the use of the building. Well, what's happened is the restrictions that the landmark status places upon St. Mary's Parish has rendered the building nearly unusable for most of our Sunday masses. So I ask you to please allow us to at least try to continue to use it as a place of worship, or it may become a very empty, hollow, historic building with no use. Thank you.
Thank you, Martha.
Thank you. I'm Rossi Corwin. I live on Mockernut Circle. Just a couple of points. I support the needs of Living Church to grow. But originally, the historic status was conferred as an honor, and I think Jane has spoken to that and others have spoken to that as well. The church and the chapel and the other buildings are historic landmark properties. I mean, they've been designated as such, and even if we remove that from their designation, they still are historic landmark properties. Mm-hmm. I think you should retain that landmark status and take care of the issue in the wording of the ordinances. I mean, I've heard several different options that to me are very simple. What Margaret has proposed just cleans it all up. That delays the process 2 weeks. 2 weeks may be a long time in the design process, but it does take care of the entire issue, from what I'm understanding. If you remove the historic landmark status and go from falling under the blue book to falling under the green book, I think I understood a sentence that was in that downtown overlay to say that you couldn't make changes. Can you read that statement? Okay. That demolition was not encouraged or allowed, even under the downtown overlay. So what I'm saying is I think that we need to leave it as a historic landmark property, have that be the honor that it is, and take care of the issue with the ordinances.
Well, let me just say we are trying to take care of the ordinances that we're doing.
I understand that, but there's
that one sentence in another document that has to be changed, and we will, as Jane mentioned earlier, we're trying to move this. That doesn't stop what we want to do tonight. We can come back and do that, and we intend to do that very, very quickly.
But if you do that now...
No, that won't change everything. That won't make this what we're doing now. Maybe I'm not understanding exactly where you're talking about, but we have to do what we're doing now in order to get it so the design review can... We already get it to the point where design review can approve it or consider it. We're there now.
Right. I understand that.
Now the question is, are there some showstoppers here if you don't change the take the landmark off?
I understand that, but I heard difficult things in the blue book, not impossible guidelines, suggestions, and I think that says it should be. But under the downtown overlay, I heard a demolition clause.
Yeah, that's going to be a big problem. It says removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition for the purposes of these guidelines. So that if we're going to go under this...
We're changing the definition.
But we've only changed the have we changed the definition of demolition everywhere, or just in that number 10, or what?
Our attorneys are going to have to help us with that.
I mean, I don't want them to get to the design review board and someone say, look on page 33, this is the end of this. We can't have that again.
But those regulations, Jane, and the historical book are so stringent that the plans that have been presented and that we've seen and that we've thought were tremendous plans, a lot of work, a lot of effort has gone into those to keep that addition in keeping with the old structure. It's a beautiful old structure, and the addition is going to be a beautiful addition to it. If we leave it under the purview of the historical register, they will not be able to do that. They will have to then go back and modify what their plans are and come back. Because when it says that all you can have is a small hallway leading from the main structure to your addition...
It doesn't say that.
It's in the design, the downtown architectural design guidelines that she read from. Removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition for the purposes of these guidelines.
Dick, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the dark blue book that deals with the historic properties. Mm-hmm. And Ed Evans stood up here himself and read out of them.
It says the new building connected to the old building. by a smaller connection.
But what does it say before that? Hallway, so that you can distinctly tell what was the old building original and what the new addition was. This is not what we're talking about with St. Mary's. We're talking about a renovation that's going to allow these people to get back into their sanctuary and worship. And that without the proper room, they're not going to be able to do that.
You don't think that the Design Review Committee, it would be my thinking, but I, again, we can't speak for them. You're right. That the way the church, we've talked about this, the way the roof is designed, that it's obvious where the new structure begins. It's completely obvious. I agree that that part. The part that's most worrisome to me in the Blue Book is not that hallway thing, because that's a suggestion. But the part that's most worrisome to me is that it, that might be the biggest problem, is that it should be a smaller structure.
Yeah. Well,
that would be a problem.
Jane, you can go into historic cathedrals all over this country, all over
Europe. I know all this.
And you see the original footprint.
Yeah, I know.
But you see the addition that was added on to it. And it's all done very ornately. It's all done to where it's just not like a huge arena. It's beautifully done. That's what these people are trying to accomplish.
I understand that.
Because of all of this that we've done and have done in the past,
forget it.
That is holding that up, and I think we need to move and allow them to go forward with it.
That's what we're trying to do, Don, and so that they don't hit a roadblock when they get to the Design Review Committee. That's why we're reading these things.
Let me say something, if I may. This is a good point that's been raised. We can handle that in February with two meetings. This won't go anyway before Design Review until March. So we've got time to correct this in the beige book, if you will. Okay?
Okay.
So we take care of that problem.
Well, my point was that I do believe that it needs to stay on the historic landmark under those guidelines and find a way for them to go to the Design Review Board.
Okay, ma'am, we would like to do that too, but I honestly don't think there's a way that we can do that by the way that it's worded right now. We're trying to preserve it, but to preserve this building, instead of fixing it so that they cannot use the building and cannot worship in it, is not, to me, preserving it. Allowing them to expand so that they can get back to worship in their main sanctuary is going to preserve that building a lot better than it turning into a sacred heart where it's no longer used for its original purpose. And that's what we're trying to do.
Let me say this too, that let's recall how this got to it briefly, and I wasn't there, and I wasn't there to do it, but to briefly recall how this got on a landmark as a landmark. If I'm correct here, there was an application where 10 people wrote in saying they basically wanted it to be a landmark, right? And since then, however, 8 of those people, one of them is no longer with us, have written saying, essentially, if they knew then what they know now, they want it off of the landmark. So the same people that back in, what, 93, said to put it on, to make it a landmark, 8 of those 10 that signed are now saying that they don't want it a landmark. Plus, there's another almost 1,600 that have signed a petition saying they want to move forward with this. And I think, too, that it's the right thing to do. And I think we ought to move forward with it.
Mr. Mayor, I just would want to point out that Council for the Church last meeting recognized that the church was aware of the placing of St. Mary's as a landmark status. So it wasn't done by a rogue group of parishioners from St. Mary's. The church was aware of it. I'm sure totally unaware of the issue it would come to today. But those folks acted in what they thought at the time was the best interest of the church.
And at that time, it could have been done that way it was done, right?
Right.
And that's no longer the case.
Right.
Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we're still in public hearing, so we want to hear from everybody that wants to speak. But, Leslie, go ahead.
I'm sitting here as I listen to the deliberation here, and this reminds me a bit of Washington, D.C., and the things that probably go on in Congress rather than here in our local town. it's supposed to be a lot simpler. And I think that when these guidelines were established, the folks that were establishing these guidelines thought that it was fair, and they were trying to protect historic structures in our town. So their intentions were good, not knowing that we would be so confused now as to what these guidelines and the impact it would have on the community. I am a member of a church and have been since I've been in Aiken for a little more than 50 years of a church that is 141 years old. It was built in around 1867. And I am certain that when, I said this before, when Lillian Red came to us and wanted that designation, we were all honored with that designation, but did not recognize the impact that it would have. And certainly, as I said, we're not in your state, Father LeBlanc, and the parishioners, where we don't have ample growth. We're right now okay in terms of growth, but I do think about the future of the church and you know, 20, 25 years from now, where we'll be in terms of this same kinds of discussion. Let's hope not. Let's hope that we can clean the language up enough that our future generations will not face this complication of trying to interpret what our ancestors meant by, what we meant by putting these guidelines in place to protect historic structures. But it is not intended to prevent you from expansion, and I will not support anything that will prevent you from expansion. You need a place to worship that you adore and cherish. You're entitled to that. And the rules that we've set is, are rules that are made by man. And anything that's made by man can be changed. And that's the way I feel about it.
Next speaker.
My name is Del Hickey, and I live at 240 Sumter Street, Southeast. While this has not been an easy process for any of us, I think we've learned a lot from it. We've learned a lot about our own guidelines. We've learned about the definition of demolition. We're cleaning that up, and I think it's to everybody's advantage that we've done that. Having done that, I wonder, and I know there's a blue book and somebody called it beige and somebody else called it green, in each of those sets of guidelines, there's some challenges. I go to design review and I listen to them, and when you're under the overlay district and you're demolishing something, there's a lot of questions about the issue of demolition. I personally feel that you all have to have the church that you want. We want to support that as a community at the same time as maintaining the integrity of this beautiful town that many of us have adopted and just cherish and love as much as everybody else does in this community. How best to get you to achieve your goals? I think that's the bottom line, that's the issue, that's the biggest concern. I think that we should have faith. Faith in the Design Review Board, faith in the Planning Commission to use their guidelines to ensure that this facility can maintain the landmark status at the same time as achieving the goals and the design that you want. I believe that's possible. I think those guidelines are there. They may sound on the surface more stringent, but if I listen to the whole issue of demolition with the overlay guidelines, they're pretty darn tight too. But I think the design review and the planning commission can help you achieve the goals that you want without removing the landmark designation. So I support it, and I do support all of our committees and the good work of this process. It's a great process, and we've all learned a great deal from it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Next.
Good
The St. Mary Help of Christians Church complex was listed on the National Register in, I believe, 1982, and has not undergone significant changes since that time. The National Register nomination in the Statement of Significance says that the St. Mary Help of Christians Church complex in Aiken, South Carolina, is an architecturally significant building group, including the Chapel of St. Clair, and it says something about that. The St. Mary Help of Christians Church, and I'll delete specific things unless you want me to read them. And then it says that those two buildings represent two distinct phases of the Gothic Revival in America. Also contributing to the historic character of the complex is the circa 1930 rectory. Now, the zoning ordinance and the historic preservation thing portion lists the designation criteria. It still appears to meet those criteria. The feelings of the owner or the original applicants are not listed as criteria for designating or taking something off the register. I think that if you remove the landmark status, you are setting a very unfortunate precedent, because the church is very clearly a significant landmark building here in Aiken, and the fact that they want to change it doesn't change its significance now. I think if you make, owner consent, part of the process, you're making this optional for everybody. Will a totally optional historic preservation program work? Probably not, because most people don't want to have to go through the process. I think the case with the Johnson Building being taken off, that was a different situation there. The city in the area issued a building permit that allowed work to be done that had not been approved by the Design Review Board or Historic Preservation Commission, and that work may not have met the guidelines. In the case of the LaGree Morgan House, the other structures that were removed, they were not the principal historic structures on that property. I think this is just a landmark case that you're considering. And the problem arose because of that one sentence that was in the zoning ordinance about demolition of a landmark not being allowed. And I would say that there's one sentence in the design guidelines about that. If those were eliminated, then the application could be considered. And there are, as Jane Baldus tried to note, there are sort of wording in the guidelines that, say sort of, usually this is how you approach something, normally. Those words are used a lot to allow some maneuvering in how the guidelines are applied. And I think that you're creating a situation, you're going to end up with having to make all sorts of strange changes in the guidelines just to accommodate this one situation, and it's going to make it confusing in a lot of respects. You're going to have to go through and make a lot of changes that aren't necessary. And I don't know if I've made myself clear, but my point is, don't remove the landmark status. You're setting a bad precedent. It still meets the criteria of a landmark, and it should remain so. Have faith in the review committee in applying the guidelines, and try to make the changes to the guidelines and the ordinance as simple as possible. Are there any questions for me before I sit down?
Let me ask you a question. Do you think it's conceivable that
given that the historic preservation, the landmark status, is pretty tough, it's pretty restrictive, do you think that by loosening it up a little bit with that the fact that you can have a demolition would might make others want to be a landmark because they realize it's not as tough as it was before, that if they need to make some changes, they at least they have a say, they can take it to the design review board, and there's an opportunity now that they didn't have before? I think that's a possibility. I think you could possibly have a few more landmarks because of there's some now some flexibility in there, but yet there's still an overview. Do you see that at all?
Well, I feel that it would be just fine to take out the sentences in the design guidelines and in the ordinance that prohibit demolition of a landmark and allow the design review board to consider each case and what is being demolished and what the situation is.
Could I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Those restrictions that Ed read about, do you think that the design review, I mean, I know you can't predict the future, but I mean, I'm wondering if the design review committee would see those as impediments that just could not be straddled, or, you know, I don't know.
I think that the members of that review board would need to, you know, look at the design and look at the guidelines.
But when you,
and I don't know that.
My question, I guess I don't know that you can answer. I mean, my question, it just seems to me that if those had been set in stone, they wouldn't have had the extra words. You know, like we learned when we did the comprehensive plan, how we added all these little words so that there was flexibility here and there. And I think I'm just afraid that downtown manual is going to have more roadblocks than this one.
It would be important for the design review board to, in making their decision, to explain why or why not they think the project meets the guidelines. But they are, in fact, guidelines. They're not. I think there's something in there that the book that says that they are not rigid. That let me look and see if I can find the book.
Okay.
Under the purpose.
It could possibly help with that.
But they're called guidelines for a purpose.
They are guidelines.
All right. It is important to remember that the standards and guidelines in this publication are not always rigid. Instead, they are the guiding principles intended to preserve the character and integrity of properties while allowing for active use.
There you go. What page is that on, Margaret?
It's the purpose on page 3.
Page 3? Okay, thank you.
Well, when they were established, we determined that there'd be guidelines, not rigid. And that's in the beige book.
No,
you're looking at the.
I have the blue book.
Yeah. Well, the others are guidelines. Yeah, the others are guidelines as well.
Set of guidelines. I just have this one. Are there any other questions for me?
Any other questions of Margaret? Comments? Okay. Thank you, Margaret.
Good evening. My name is Maureen Simpson. I'm a cradle member of St. Mary Help of Christians, like some people here. I want to thank the City Council for their serious consideration of our plea. My biggest concern is if we do not have the ability and the permission to grow, that St. Mary's will be left behind as we go to the south side, as so many editorials asked us to do, and that it will become, thank you for saying it, the next Sacred Heart Cultural Center. Be desanctified. Maybe, you know, some non-Christian group would like to buy it for meetings. Maybe we could leave it to the city to let them handle it and let them take over the care of the cost of it and let it be there for weddings and some concerts and meetings. That's not my goal for my home church. And I thank all of you so much for taking the time to try to get all this stickly, prickly stuff out of the way, because it's not fun and it's very tedious. But thank you so much for considering it and for helping us and for helping St. Mary's grow.
Thank you, Maureen. Thank you.
I'm Bill Collins. I live on Spyglass Drive in Aiken. I'm a member of St. Mary's Parish. I've been a resident of Aiken and a member of the parish since 1991. I love Aiken. I think it's a wonderful city. And I commend the city government, the council, and the planning commission, the design review board over the years in preserving the downtown character and so on. I think the whole business of I'm not an expert on the business of historic preservation and so on by any means, nor am I a lawyer. But it does seem to me, from what I've heard and from what I've come to understand about the process, that first of all, having the historic landmark designation does impose more roadblocks on consideration of expansion of the church than if it were not so designated. I'll say that simply. And the more roadblocks there are, the greater potential difficulties and perhaps insuperable difficulties there will be. And people have already spoken eloquently about the importance of being able to expand the present worship space. I want to speak to the question of precedent of removing the landmark designation. Again, I'm not an attorney. I heard the gentleman here, whose name unfortunately I forgot, say it could become an optional willy-nilly kind of thing. This doesn't seem to me like a willy-nilly process. My goodness! It seems to me it's built into the city ordinance, the process for getting designation as historic landmark and also the process for removing the designation. So that process is built into the law, if I'm not mistaken. So therefore, there's no precedent in law here at all. No precedent in law in this matter. It's built into the law, the process of removing the historic landmark designation. It's not an easy process, not one done lightly, not one done willy-nilly. It goes to the city council after going to the design review board and the planning commission and so on, the process we've all been working through. So it's far from being willy-nilly and optional. And it's not, in my mind, a precedent in law. If you decide, as I hope you will, to remove the landmark designation from everything but the chapel, that won't be a legal precedent. The legal process is built into the zoning ordinance. It's not a precedent in fact either, though perhaps the scope of it is large, as has been said. We had the Jackson Building was on the historic register and then was removed by action of this process. Now, you might say the Jackson Building is not of the same... I don't want to insult Mr. Jackson, but not of the same stature, if you will, of St. Mary's Church. But nevertheless, there have been other cases of buildings that were historic, designated historic landmarks in Aiken, at least one that I know of, and there may be others being removed. So I suggest to you that the question of precedent and the idea of it becoming a willy-nilly sort of thing is really not true. It's not a legal precedent, and it's far from being willy-nilly. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Good evening. My name's Mickey Anaclario. I appreciate all your attention and really trying to help us work through this. I am a parishioner of St. Mary's Church, but I want to address you tonight as a property owner who is behind, actually I'm the neighbor to St. Mary's Church. I own the apartment building at 243 York Street, which is directly across the railroad tracks and from the church, and it's the second oldest house in Aiken, built in about 1859. Unfortunately, I'm not a landmark. I don't know that I want to be a landmark at this point. I also live at 260 Fairfield Street, which is on the block of the first Aiken County, well, I won't say the first, of one of the Aiken County courthouses between Colleton, Fairfield, and Union. Not unfortunately, because I've had good and bad experiences, but I am of the opinion that, yes, we do need the Historical Commission because it does preserve this city. Best city in the country, I can tell you that right now. And because of the processes like what we're going through now. The only unfortunate thing, I'm in the Blue Book. And boy, do I know the Blue Book. Because that is the most strictest thing that you have to go before when you go before the Historical Commission to get any changes done. First of all, it's really the property owner's. It's the property owner's decision to change his property. Nobody else is in this world changes that property. It's the property owner's. And that's what I want to speak to you tonight is a property rights owner. Because whatever decisions are coming out of here that go down to historical directly affect me on how I can do something with the building I have. Now, I'll say this. I've worked with the Historical Commission a great deal, and a lot of things they didn't let me do, a lot of things they did let me do. And some things I didn't think were right, come to find out they were right in the end. And my building will be done. I don't know if anybody's noticed on the corner of York and Colleton, and the grass, along with the city's help, the grass is going in at my expense there. The city helped me with the curbing. But I think it's just made that block tremendous, and I'm so proud of that. I can't tell you any more than that. That property's been in my family for 50-something years. So all of this means a lot to me, but I come here tonight to speak to you, like I said, from property rights. Our avenue for being in the overlay district is the Historical Commission, which was in 1990 when it came about. I owned the house next to it before that. No big deal. I mean, my grandfather put aluminum siding, he put stucco on houses, no big deal. But whenever the historical came about, then we had these guidelines that we have to go through. Well, that is the avenue that we as owners get to change our building to suit the needs that change over the years. Nothing stays the same. We all know that. I appreciate where I think you guys are going. You guys want to let us do what we need to do. And that is a need that we decided or the church decided. And I appreciate you trying to get us to that point. However, what Mr. Tucker said tonight, that the easiest way to do it is to remove the landmark, is only because of the different rules that have been implemented. A landmark, you could be a different way in 1993. You only need 10 people and the right paperwork and then get the council to go for it. Now, the owner actually has to decide if he wants to be on the landmark or not. So we're talking about the law has changed within this time period in itself. So if things have changed anyway, why can't we start from fresh? Let us get a fair hearing, which every property rights person or every property owner deserves, to be able to change their property in a way that is suitable to the people that have elected you people to give us the commission that comes all on down. Just trying to think what... Mostly, like I said, I come before you just to see. I want us to get to the historical. Again, one of the other reasons, and Jane, I'll say this, and I appreciate y'all trying to get to this point. Sure, the landmark is a great prestige. It's a great thing to do. But just like what we've already come through, opposition will always find a way to discourage you or to knock you down on what you want to do to change. Well, if this isn't removed, I'm telling you, that book is as complicated as it gets. And you guys don't know it. He knows it pretty better than anybody in this room. But somebody that does not want this to happen will find something in that book to prevent this to happen, and we'll be right back in front of you. So I just ask you if there's any way possible for you guys to figure out a way so that we can go forward, and then we'll deal with it, because you guys, I really think, need to deal with the landmark status on your own at a different time. It'd be greatly appreciated.
Thank you, Megan. Thank you.
My name is Marilyn Burrill. I live on Summerwood Way in Aiken, and I am a member of St. Mary's Parish also. And I think Jane said it very eloquently earlier, that the historic site is supposed to be an honor, not a burden. And it is very clear that it has become a huge burden for St. Mary's, and that we do want to be relieved of that burden. We appreciate the honor, but we decline. The other point that I would like to make is that I think if you have seen our plans, you see that we are treating this precious historic site with the utmost respect and care. And we will continue to do that as we make changes to it so that we can continue to baptize our infants and to go to Mass there and to practice our sacraments there. And I appreciate your support, and I pray that the Design Review Board will be as objective in their review of the restrictions as you are. Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Lucy Knowles, 1141 Two Notch Road in the city of Aiken. And I'm also a happy landowner in the historic district. And when my family's house was first made a part of one of the historic districts, my daddy fussed and fumed. But I want to tell you what, the land values in that district have increased very dramatically as a result of the protection on Berry Road for historic residences. And so I urge you to consider that the good that the historic ordinance has done for our city. But I actually came up to talk because I'm still confused. And if I understood the discussion earlier, what we're really talking about, we're not talking about landmark status. We're talking about whether or not St. Mary's stays on the historic register, which is basically like my house in the historic district. And it's the same thing. And the same rules and regulations would apply to St. Mary's as apply to my house. Is that correct? We got that right?
I don't think so. Not if it's removed from the landmark status.
Well, that's
what makes it.
But now, St. Mary's is in
now an
historic district of one building.
Yes, district of one itself.
One lot. That's my next point. One lot. And so the rules and regulations, I mean, they're not somehow more special than my family's house. They're just the same, treated the same, subject to the same rules and regulations. Is that right? It's in the historic district.
Well, yeah, if yours is you're in a district. Your landmark is your home.
No,
a landmark?
It's not. This is what I'm trying to understand. My house is not a landmark, but it's in the historic district. Okay? Mm-hmm. Historic district.
So it would be
so
judged by the
blue book,
the
right?
The blue book.
Same ones. So what the discussion about landmark, not landmark, is really not correct.
I think it is for this case.
It's historic district, not historic district.
Well, it's landmark. It's landmark.
It's even worse than that because I think it's changed to historic site. It is indeed a historic site.
Okay. landmark is really not the issue here.
Well,
the issue is historic site, not historic site.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Right. Right.
Okay.
The landmark makes it a historic site. Is that right?
The landmark status places it under the purview of the Blue Book.
Absolutely.
That's the key.
Okay.
The landmark status places it.
So here's what I'm really confused about, and that is we have, I think, one lot. All of the property is on one lot. Is that correct? So we're going to have a little tiny historic landmark something with St. Clair's, and we're going to have an historic district line running through the property line, which I'm pretty well sure you can't do that with zoning. So I'm sort of curious as to how you can have a little historic district on part of a piece of property.
Well, Lucy, we've got the case in several other places. I mentioned earlier the 10 Downing. That's a landmark.
Right.
When you remove the landmark from 10 Downing, if it ever was, then it would no longer be historic.
Right, but my point here is you're not taking the whole landmark status away. You're still leaving St. Clair's
and
the historic property. And how can you do that without subdividing the property?
You've got Father LeBlanc.
Well, now,
I mean, that's
Can you touch on that, Bill? Anybody that
yes, at the risk of contradicting my Barrow Street.
Well, I'm just asking
the property. The St. Mary's property is already that way, in that the garage, Smith Hall, and the lean-to have never been on the historic registry, and so the property is already split between landmark status and non-landmark status on one lot.
Right, right.
Sorry. Well, I just think that's something that you should look into and make sure that. But I would just urge you to, and I think there's obviously consensus here for allowing this to go forward to the Design Review Commission. But it seems to me that if you're keeping St. Clair's historic, that you should apply the Blue Book to this project, and that that's more appropriate. Given that you have an historic landmark right next door to St. Mary's, and that that's the appropriate decision, is to use the Blue Book and not the Beige Book.
Well, I think we'll leave that up to the Design Review Board, who that's their responsibility as to what book they're going to apply, but I think it would certainly...
It depends on
what happens here with this issue as to what...
No, that's what you guys are voting on.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we'll decide,
right.
And then that'll dictate, I think, exactly what book will be used.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Lucy. Yes, sir.
My name is James LeBlanc. I live on the property. And it's a rectangular... rectangular-shaped lot at Park and York. And in 1993, there was designated on the Aiken Historic Register as a landmark. Everything on that lot, including all the land, except only Smith Parish Hall, the two-car garage, and the lean-to, whatever that is. I'm not sure what that is. It might have been busted down already, I don't know. So the parcel was subjected from 1993 to two different regimes of regulation. It's all in the downtown overlay district, so it's all regulated by the downtown overlay district, and those aspects of the parcel that were designated to the Aiken Historic Register were and are today regulated by the Blue Book. I don't know what that's called. So today, the parcel where the church is and where I live is regulated by two sets of guidelines. And our proposal is to demolish the Parish Hall, Smith Hall, which is simply downtown overlay district building, and the garage, ditto, downtown overlay district, and to demolish the rectory and the colonnade, which are designated to the Aiken Historic Register at this moment, and to take down the back wall of the church, which is designated to the Aiken Historic Register at this moment. So right now today we face two regimes of regulation, two sets of guidelines. And that's why we're here, of course, is that we discovered that the Blue Book set of guidelines has a rule in it, well, actually the statute, and then the Blue Book set of guidelines reflect the statute, has a rule in it, no demolition whatsoever of landmarks. So the proposal that the Planning Commission made to the council was to begin to work to allow us to bring our plans to the Aiken Design Review Board for a fair hearing by taking away the landmark designation or the Aiken Historic Register designation from the land itself, from the rectory and the colonnade. That's what the Planning Commission proposed to you. It was to de-landmark some landmark. And we would assert and always want to keep before your eyes that the land itself, the colonnade, and the rectory are a lot less old than the church and the St. Clair Chapel. But they've been designated landmark in 1993. So My guess is that most of the folks on the council are ready to take away the landmark designation on the rectory, the colonnade, and the land. So the proposition of taking landmark designations away is already achieved quite a range of acceptance here, I think. And that's right, that's rightly so, because the statute allows for the taking away of a landmark designation, given this process. Ask the Design Review Board, get their recommendation, ask the Planning Commission, get their recommendation, come finally to the City Council. The same way out as in to landmarking. So I just want to bring that vividly to everybody's attention, is that the question is not whether or not to de-landmark something. I don't think. I think most of the people on the council are ready to de-landmark something. The rectory, the colonnade, and the land itself. The distinction between the church and the chapel is that the chapel is out on the corner. It stands alone. It's smallish. It seats 50, 60 people. We have mass there every Friday evening and can squeeze 60 people in there. We intend to use it indefinitely in the future, as long as we're operating out of that corner, for perpetual adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and for mass on Friday evenings and whatever else. It's been recently renovated on the inside. I shouldn't say renovated. It was cleaned up, beautifully cleaned up on the inside. And the outside looks great. And there isn't a plan in the world to do anything to change the chapel. And so it'll sit very nicely, conveniently, for the people of St. Mary's out on the corner there, landmarked or designated to the Aiken Historic Register. Won't be a problem for us. And it would be a solace, I think, to the city of Aiken and to the community that's most particularly interested in historic preservation that St. Clair Chapel remain a landmark. But the church is in a different situation. The church building itself is in a different situation. Unlike St. Clair Chapel, we need to take the back wall off the church in order to make this expansion work. Like the colonnade and the rectory, the church is a building that we need to take a wall down. And it is directly involved, obviously, in the plan to expand the church. That's why we would be taking the rectory down. If we can't expand the church, we would not take the rectory down. We wouldn't take the colonnade down, and it really wouldn't matter that the land was landmarked. So, my view is, and I offer this to you for your consideration, that the landmarking or de-landmarking, the taking off the Aiken Historic Register of the church, is much more akin to the proposal to take the rectory, the colonnade, and the land off the Aiken Historic Register. And I'm pleading with you to take all of that off the register so that we, when we go back to the Aiken Design Review Board, we will have just one set of guidelines, the Downtown Overlay District guidelines, to attend to, and when we present our plans to the Aiken Design Review Board. And that will put us in exactly the same position of every other church downtown, with one exception. We will be in the same position as the First Baptist Church when it came a few months ago to the Aiken Design Review Board to get permission, certificate of appropriateness on some re-roofing, and didn't have to do anything about the Blue Book. And we'll be in the same position as the Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church, and St. Thaddeus Church, built in 1842, if they were proposing to do something like what we're doing or proposing to do with our church, they'd be able to go to the Aiken Design Review Board under the Downtown Overlay District guidelines only and get their plans reviewed. That's what we're looking for. Please.
He only brings the other lawyers so that...
I'm sorry.
You brought the other lawyer along, I see.
Any questions for me?
Any questions, comments? Thank you, sir.
Thank you all for this extraordinary dedication of your time and energies and your concern with respect to the whole city and St. Mary's in particular. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Colleen Reed, 207 Brandon Road in Aiken. As of this evening, you've changed the definition of demolition within the city of Aiken. And my question to you is, with that change, is it really necessary to remove the landmark status from the building?
You want my answer?
Yes.
I think it is, because we want to do everything we can to make this work. I say we, me. I want to do everything I can personally to make this work, because of all the many reasons that have already been mentioned. This is a living building. It's not a dead building. We need to do things for our parishioners and to make it alive and even more alive if we can.
And
I don't think it is going to hurt anything to do this in this particular case.
I understand. Having been involved in bringing three properties before you requesting landmark status, I'm, as you can well imagine, opposed to removing that designation. I understand what the church has gone through. I think if you have faith in the Design Review Board, Blue Book or the other book, that their decisions are going to weigh equally, I think that they would do what is right for the church and to keep it a vibrant building. As far as it being only one of two churches on the historic register, based on the amount of time, effort, and energy that it takes to put a property on the register, perhaps no one in the other churches was willing to invest that. I myself, it was 3 years plus to get the farmers market on the historic register, 2 years for the Emanuel School building, and once I got the hang of it, it was only a year for the cemetery. So it does take a lot of time, effort, and energy, and it does take a group of individuals to step forward and do that work. If no one steps forward, it's not going to get done. So I'm asking you to please not take it off as a landmark.
Okay. Thank you, Colleen.
Jeb wants to talk, I guess.
Yes, sir. If there's anyone else that wants to speak, just go on over there close to the mic, if you will, and you'll be next.
I'm Jack Beckham. I live at 118 Governor Lane. I come in support of the removal, and that's the first point I'd like to make. I got 2 points I'd like to make. One is that the church has been there, I understand, for over 105 years, and these people have taken very good care of it. I'm sure they're proud of it, and I'm sure they'll continue to take care of it. And I have a lot of faith in the public. I think our government, in the last few years, I've noticed that seem like we don't trust people as much as we did. We don't trust the individual to do what's right. And I trust these people to do what's right with that church a lot better than I would some board or some review board. The second point is that I just wonder if an individual up here without a lot of people and without a lot of support and without a couple of lawyers, could they get something approved? And I know that we want to make Aiken a beautiful place, and I agree with Ms. Clyburn. Seem like we agree on most things I hear her say. She's got a lot of common sense. And we want to make this place a good place, and I think they have. But Aiken was a beautiful place before we had a lot of review boards. And it's going to continue to be a beautiful place as long as we put trust in the individual to do the right thing. When we start imposing laws and bureaucratic hurdles to jump over, I don't think that improves anything. What improves things is giving a person the opportunity and trying to encourage them to do the right thing. I never have been able to make my kids do anything. I have always tried to encourage them to do things. So I think if we would look at it in that aspect, and I think most of you have, thank goodness we do have some good people on the council. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Is anyone else now that would like to speak? Okay. It's back to City Council for consideration now.
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I think we've spent a lot of time on this, but I wanted to mention one other point, that something that occurred to me earlier today, and that is that at the time that this church was put on the historic register, that time was before 1999. And so some things happened in 1999 that further complicated the matter. But I do not see, from listening to what I heard in the book, in the two books, I do not see how we could possibly give them the okay to go ahead without removing this from the historic register. And I think I can get a second if we move to put this to remove this from the that we approve this on second reading as written, that we remove this from the historic register, and leaving just the chapel.
I'll second.
Okay. I second it.
Yeah. And
did you second it already?
No, I really just I would like to point out that I supported the idea of the changes and was under the impression that we would be able to bring the case appropriately to the Design and Review Board, but we were not aware, I certainly was not aware, of two different standards applying to the Design and Review. Therefore, in spite of the fact that I voted against it the first time, I will vote for it this time. I think it's the fair thing to do.
I'd like to make a couple of comments if I could. I think it's all agreed, and everyone here realizes that there's seven votes to make sure that this package is presented to the Design Review Board. I thought, quite frankly, it was going to be a simple process when it first came here. The church went to the Design Review Board. They said, we've got this sentence. Because of this sentence, we can't even talk to you. They came to the Planning Commission and to us, and we've changed this sentence. And now, very clearly, the church will be able to present its case to the Design Review Board. My point of concern all along has been support for the Historic Preservation Program. I think, unfortunately, I'm hearing a lot of distrust of the Design Review Board, which, quite frankly, is something no different than the City Council. We've all volunteered to put ourselves in a limelight and make some tough decisions and listen to people. But we, for some reason, just don't want to seem to trust that the Design Review Board, using the historic guidelines, will approve the package. I'm not sure why we say that, but I think there's my clear understanding that that's the case. The only reason that I voted no last time was because of the preservation of the landmark status. I'm still convinced, I have enough faith in the process, that we could retain this wonderful church and the landmark status and still proceed. There's probably about 55 or 60 people that won't agree with that statement, but I just want you to know that where I come from is trying to balance the desires of the church, which I clearly support. The church has every right to have their project reviewed by the Design Review Board, no question about that. I just think there needs to be a more significant role placed by historic preservation. We've heard from a few people who think that way as well. So this may be one of these, when it comes time to raise my hand, I'll make my decision, but I want you to know it's a tough decision. And I can speak for all of us. We've all been dealing with this issue for many, 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 many hours. But I do support the position of the church to have their day at the Design Review Board. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't want... I hope that all of you are as proud of your appointee to the Design and Review Board as I am, because I think they have a really hard job, and I do think they work hard. And my decision was not based on not trusting them. It's probably more about not having understood all of what we did in putting all of that and passing all of that in the manuals. And so I just feel like I would like for them to be free to go ahead and pursue their dream. I mean, faith without works is dead, and I think they have certainly worked hard to get where they are right now. And I don't want this to reflect at all on the design and review board, because I do think they do a wonderful job.
I want to say that, too. I trust them.
Yeah.
As much as I trust us or any of our boards. Each of us, of course, have one appointee to the boards. That's how those people get where they are. And they do have a hard job. And so I do have faith and trust in them and making the right decision as they feel that's right, just like we do. And I think they take time like we do. And so I wouldn't want to indicate in any way that there's a distrust. And we're doing what we are because we distrust. I think we're doing what we are, at least from my view, to make it a little bit easier for them to do their job. That's how I see that. Any other? Just make one little comment here, and I think if we meant it in our motions, that this does include the land as well as the building, taking the landmark off. Yes, okay.
In the ordinance, at the section.
Are there any other comments?
Yes, I was reflecting on Mr. Collins' comments and thinking that isn't it great to live in a town where you feel that your government works, that you can come to city council and feel that your comments are listened to. You may not always agree with everything that's being said or all the decisions, but you're being heard. And I don't know if you have that kind of form of government other than your local city and county that you can come to and feel that your comments are being heard, that you've got people that don't come here with preconceived notions about how they're going to vote, but rather we're listening to each one of you individually and making up our minds. Mm-hmm. We've not conspired with each other as to how we're going to vote, but rather it's an independent decision amongst all of us. And this is a great town and a great form of government, I think.
Mr. Mayor, if I could, please. I would like to say, number one, that I love Aiken, and I'm as concerned about historical properties in Aiken as anybody else that lives here in Aiken. I would like to preserve as many buildings as we possibly can. I think the problem, and it's not been an easy decision, but the problem that we're faced with is there's so many of our ordinances that need work, apparently, that will not work with one another. One of the books disagrees with the other. One of the ordinances disagrees, and that's something that we need to look into and delve into and correct and make it so that a property can be listed, can be a landmark status, but still be able to make some improvements, some moderate improvements. But the problem that I have with this is St. Mary's has been entangled in this problem for over a year and a half now. It's been a long process for them. I know they're looking to the end of this and hoping to be able to go forward with their building program. And so it's with that I'm supporting removing St. Mary's from the landmark status.
And I'm the last one, I think, and we've all talked. I have to say that I voted for the redefining of demolition so that we wouldn't have to remove it. That's why I voted for that. And I because I think that you need to go to the design review board. I believe that with my whole heart. On the other hand, I'm worried about this white book. There's some definitions I'm reading right now that we didn't alter that say that demolition has to be of structures that haven't been taken care of, have deteriorated to the point that rehabilitation is technically not feasible. Mm-hmm. That certainly isn't true of this property. There's also a statement in the white book, the report, removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition. We haven't changed that. We've only changed the definition of demolition that applied to the Blue Book. And I don't agree that all of those little things about hallways and all are necessary. I think any decent design review committee will look at a sanctuary and, goodness gracious, realize that it has to be extended in a rational way if it's going to be extended at all. I'm just wondering, I want this to get to the design review committee, and I want it to successfully go there. I believe the Blue Book would fit this historic building better than the White Book. I really do. I don't know how we're going to fix these two things before the hearing in March. Maybe we can. But I thought we had fixed the thing we need to fix so that it could go on ahead without any delay whatsoever. But so I'm thinking that the Blue Book may be a better fit than the White Book for this structure. I want it to be adapted. I want this church to be used. I can't think of anything I want more. But I, on the other hand, I really can't vote to say this building isn't a landmark, because in my mind, I mean, and Marilyn, I'm sorry, if I don't want it to be a burden, but in my mind, if I think of buildings that are landmarks in Aiken, St. Mary's Church is like one of the first ones I think of. I mean, it's such a, it's so important, and I don't want that to be an impediment, and therefore the definition of demolition had to be changed, in my opinion. So I know this is not popular, but that's the way I see it. I see problems any way we go, but we're going to get over these problems. I mean, that's the good thing about Aiken, and that's a good thing about these city council meetings. They may last forever, but we do slog through it at last. We do.
Jane, those two things, and if there's another one, we can fix that too. We ought to be able to fix that in February with that two meetings. We can always have a special meeting also if we need another special meeting, and we've never hesitated to do that when we needed that. And since we mentioned the length of our meeting sometime, one of the things we, and council approves this, although sometimes they fuss a little bit at me, in 22 years that I've been on council, we've never not heard anybody that wanted to speak. We've listened to everybody, even if they were from Kalamazoo, you know, or someone, because we learn when we hear other opinions. If we don't, how are we going to learn sometimes, you know? So that's one thing we're all proud of. I know we're all proud of it. Sure, sometimes our meetings go long. Michael used to fuss at me a little bit sometimes when he was on city council. But Mike, you know that. We've always listened to everybody, and we will continue that. Okay, any other comments? If not, we all know the motion. All in favor? Okay, opposed? Okay. Passes 6-1. And we certainly want to tell you that we appreciate your comments and thank everybody for being here and helping us in our decision process.
Mr. Mayor, if you could, what we'll do is Councilwoman Waters has brought up a good point, and this has been a very confusing process, and I apologize on behalf of the staff and with all this confusion. But we're setting new precedent here, and we're setting, you know, we're plowing new ground as to where, what, how to look at these structures and the downtown overlay. We will go ahead and, over the next couple of weeks, look at this downtown design guidelines and see, based on what you vote on tonight, how that fits and if any changes need to be made, hopefully so that you can get this by the next meeting.
Mr. Duke, I was just going to suggest, since candidly, when Mr. Evans was reading from section 3.1.11 at page 33, and he read that unfortunate sentence that says removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition for the purposes of these guidelines, the last ordinance council just considered, but the previous ordinance where we amended the definition of demolition, the ordinance does say that we're not only amending the zoning ordinance definition of demolition, but it also says we're amending the design review manual regarding the definition of demolition. And since all of the members of council voted in favor of that particular ordinance, if one member of council wanted to vote to reconsider that ordinance, I believe it would be appropriate to also delete that sentence on page 33, which would be in keeping, I think, with council's desire to amend the zoning ordinance. As we were listening to the discussion, I went back in the back room and conferred with my co-counsel, Mr. Pierce, and he agrees with that interpretation. You are amending the design review manual with that ordinance. This is in the design review manual, so the proper notice has been sent out, and that's in keeping with what you want to do. So you could get that sentence out of the design review manual.
Well, then we didn't have to amend the definition of demolition.
No, you did. You actually did. Because the definition of demolition is in the zoning ordinance. So you had to amend that. But, you know, I don't understand why this sentence would be in the design review manual if you've got a definition of demolition in the zoning ordinance. And so that sentence could easily come out, and then at least for St. Mary's purposes, they don't have a hindrance to having their application considered by the design review board. That sentence to me would be, if you left that sentence in the design review manual, it would be contrary to the ordinance that you just passed, and it could create a conflict. We could change it later, but I think you have the ability to change it tonight if that's council's
just
desire.
Just simply by doing a motion to reconsider.
A motion to reconsider to allow that particular sentence to be deleted from page 33. Let me phrase it in a way I think you'll find more pleasing. The motion to reconsider would be to allow reconsideration of the ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance and the design review manual regarding the definition of demolition. Council would first have to vote for the reconsideration. If you were going to vote in favor of the reconsideration, then the motion would be to amend that ordinance to amend section 3.1.11 of the Downtown Architectural Design Guidelines to delete the next to last sentence on page 33, which reads, "Removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition for the purposes of these guidelines."
Just a question, please. That those are guidelines for existing commercial type buildings.
Correct.
Is the church a commercial type building?
Well,
we've got commercial type, we got non-commercial type, and we have residential. You know, when we get into this kind of stuff, I'd love to be a lot more deliberate about the process. Yeah. I agree with
that. That is an existing commercial type building. If you look on the next page, the previous page, page 32. Section 3.1.10 talks about additions to existing structures under the guidelines for existing commercial type buildings. All of the references are pictures of churches.
That's a hint.
Actually, I was talking to Mr. Pierce. One of them actually looks like St. Mary's.
Actually, it does, doesn't it?
I don't know. I still think we still have time to do it.
We're just deleting.
Let's think this through.
I agree with Jane that
to make a motion to reconsider now, it takes a second reading.
If I may, the reason I'm suggesting this now is this is second reading. It's already been to the Planning Commission for their review or the Design Review Board for their review, and if you do this as I'm suggesting to you, then it doesn't have to go through that whole process.
And it gives consistency with one.
And it is consistent with what has been before you already and has already been before the Design Review Board. I'm not sure somebody saw that sentence until Mr. Evans read it tonight while we were discussing this thing.
Okay.
I certainly was not aware of it.
Okay. So the motion would be to reconsider the definition.
The motion is to reconsider the ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance and the design review manual regarding the definition of demolition. And I think I'm okay if you say, and we want it to be amended in the way that our city attorney just read into the record.
We want to put him on the spot.
Can we continue this? I mean, not the St. Mary's thing. That's done. Can we continue this alteration of the manual so we can look through it and be sure we're not fumbling around again?
I still think you need to come back with that review process.
I think the last
sentence in section 5 needs to be deleted at some point in the future.
Yes.
But as you do that, there's going to be other changes that need to be considered also. All I'm saying is this sentence right now conflicts with the ordinance that you passed two ordinances ago. And I think that sentence needs to come out so that your intent is clear.
We don't have an ordinance on the book that says if there's a conflict that the newest ordinance applies. When there's a conflict.
Okay.
For the record,
let's get it, let Gary go through that one more time, and then we'll have.
I'm going to make the motion.
Okay.
But go ahead.
You want to make it? You want to say that one more time?
The motion to reconsider.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we first of all have council vote if they want to reconsider an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance and the design review manual regarding the definition of demolition.
And that's what your motion was for.
Okay.
So moved.
So moved. Yeah.
Second.
No.
Second.
Second. Second.
What, to what end now?
And then the proposed amendment to that ordinance. Well, you'll need to vote on that first.
Okay. Okay. Wait, Jane has a question.
What's the point? Give it to me again.
To delete the sentence on page 33 of the design review guidelines that says removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition for the purposes of these guidelines. That's a direct conflict with the ordinance that you passed earlier tonight.
The thing, Gary, that bothers me the most about this whole thing is we were trying to get this through tonight. That's why we amended the definition of demolition. We could have just taken out the sentence, but that would have taken another reading. It would have been first reading again. So, you know, we saved ourselves supposedly 2 weeks. And now we're going back and changing, I don't know.
No, the reason to do this now is so that we don't have to go back and wait another 2 weeks.
But you told us that this was I went through this whole thing with demolition because I was told that that was the fastest way to get this thing resolved.
Well, we're trying
so to it wasn't.
We're trying to get it resolved tonight, Jane.
I'm of the impression that we're trying to make it consistent with both books. Is that
absolutely
right?
That's correct.
Okay, that's what it is.
Right.
So you made a motion.
Yes, and you seconded.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second.
This is the motion to reconsider that
that's
ordinance.
Correct.
Okay.
But now we need to take a vote on
it. Okay, any discussion on that? If not, show of hands of approval here for that.
Aye.
Opposed?
I haven't read the whole section. I mean, you all haven't read the whole section either.
Okay,
so we don't know if this is the only part we need to amend or the whole part we need to amend.
Right now, we know this is something that needs to be amended.
I'm just sick of it.
I have all the faith and confidence in our attorneys here. So, Jane, you're not voting at all, right?
No, I voted against the reconsideration.
Okay. Passes 6-1.
Okay. And then the proposed amendment, if this is council's desire, would be to remove the sentence located in section 3.1.11 of the downtown architectural design guidelines.
All right, say that again, please, slowly.
To remove from section 3.1.11 of the downtown architectural design guidelines,
page 33,
the next to last sentence on page 33 that says removal of a portion of an existing building shall be considered to be demolition for the purposes of these guidelines. That would be the amendment to that ordinance.
So moved, Mr. Mayor, that we approve that we amend the ordinance 3.1.11 under the design
under the downtown
architectural design guidelines.
Mm-hmm. Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor.
Yeah, I'll okay. That. Why not?
Okay, passes.
Why not? Nobody's going to read it anyway.
Mr. Mayor and Council, okay. To get back to the point I was making, we still will go ahead and review the manuals so that if there are any other conflicting things, we'll bring back to you on it. There may be some other things, and we'll bring those back if necessary. At the next meeting.
Okay.
Should we invite anybody to want to serve on that committee or sit in on it?
St. Mary's is done.
Okay. Again, thank you, everyone. You can stay if you'd like. let's take a short break, please.
Yeah.
Second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to reassign the leases between Aiken Aviation Enterprises and AvServe LLC to Buzz Avdell.
Inc. Mr. LeDuc, please.
This has been quite a day, and I'd like to ask counsel to carry this one over. I got a call from Mike Labor with the FBO right before 5 o'clock asking that there's been a couple of things that have come to light on this. He doesn't think it's a problem, but he would like us to carry over this item to next meeting. By you voting to carry this over, it'll automatically then appear again on the next meeting.
Continue.
Versus tabling it, then you'd have to bring it back up again and vote to put it back on the agenda. So
we want to continue it, don't we?
That's what you're doing.
Carry over,
continue.
Continue is the same basic principle.
Yeah.
But again, it's like I said, it's been quite a day as we learned certain things. And so Mike Labor, the FBO, has asked that council carry it over and continue this to the next meeting.
So moved.
Okay.
Second.
We're going second. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Item 6, second reading public hearing of an ordinance regarding news racks in the downtown. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, this is a fun evening. This is an ordinance adding section 36-12 of the Aiken City Code regarding the placement of city-owned news racks in the Central Business District. At your desk tonight was an ordinance concerning this. There, it was pointed out to us by Mr. Holly over there, that there was one small section that was changed at the December meeting. It was not reflected in this ordinance, and so you have the proper ordinance before you. The change was just it had referenced 11 locations versus 11 news racks, and that's the only change. It was just how it was being defined. So you have the proper one in front of you. A lot of history on this. We've been talking about this for several years now. Hopefully we could resolve it one way or the other as to what council would like to do. We went through the entire downtown today, Mr. Huggins and myself, and looked at all the locations. And based on the ordinance that you have before you, it puts a lot of the day-to-day decision-making on the city manager instead of having to go back to city council every time that a change has to be made. It also says that the news racks, that you'd have some reasonableness with all this, and that you could have news racks about approximately every 400 feet. So that means anybody that walks on the sidewalk, they can look to the right or the left 200 feet, and there's probably some unit out there that they go to. Currently, when you look at the number of displays out there, and I won't call them news racks because they're very few of them are newspapers. Most of them are real estate, skirt, apartments, cars, numerous different things, and they're grouped in two or three, except for a section right behind the city hall, a location by Pat's Restaurant, of course, up by the post office, and then up by New Moon, there's like five or six, and a couple other locations where there's five or six different racks. If council were to approve this tonight, we would then go out to all the publishers, ask the publishers, how many are you willing to purchase or to go ahead and pay the yearly fee to determine is there a reasonable number of units and how would they be in relation to other sections of the units. In other words, that 400-foot rule. And so the locations you have shown are probably tentative at best because some of these are, the way they're showing right now, are closer than 400 feet apart, and some of these are not really reflecting where the racks are currently. But we felt that we could find a location in front of the various establishments where there are racks now, and to do it in a reasonable manner. You had asked that this ordinance would be sent to everybody that is a publisher. We did send this to various publishers around the country, USA Today, and Greenville News, and the Atlanta Constitution, and Wall Street Journal, and all those, letting them know that this was forthcoming. We also looked to see approximately what would be the cost per year, and based on a 8-unit section or 8 different little boxes
that are tied together. That's about $3,000. If you look at an amortization of around 5 years, that comes out to be about $75 per year. So that's the approximate cost that we'd be looking on recovering from each person that wants to go ahead and have these types of racks. Predominantly, again, looking throughout the downtown today, I would say that 75% of the boxes that are out there have something to do with home sales or apartments. I was kind of surprised, and I'm not talking about over by the post office, but very few of them are coin-generated newspapers. As we, you know, when we first start talking about newspaper racks, they're really not newspaper racks, they're publication racks. The Chronicle has a number of different publications, you know, over and beyond the newspaper. The Standard now has a number of them over and above the paper. And then there's various other publishers that are out there. But that's the long and short of what's out there. Again, Council's talked about this at length. We've made a number of changes. We think we probably have the best possible scenario in trying to work this out. So it's to us, again, you can make changes that you want to. We have tried to work with the publishers in the best possibility in getting this done. And so we're here tonight to find out, do we go forward on this or not? And so for your consideration, this is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to place city-owned news racks in the Central Business District.
Thank you, Roger. We certainly appreciate all the work you and the staff have done working with others to come to this point this evening. This is second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. If there's anyone who wants to speak on this issue, you may do so. Just come on up and tell us your name and where you live. If not, okay, good. It's back to City Council then for consideration.
I have a question. Do we have any feeling about whether there are going to be insufficient spaces for requests?
Well, if we came to a location, let's say it's in front of Pat's, and there are 9 publications that want to go in that rack, then we'd build a modular section that would hold 10 different publications. The area that we're going to start running into some problems is when somebody says, well, you know, I'd like to be at this location, but only 3 people really want to pay for it. Do we go ahead and put it in there or not? You know, and then start looking at the 400-foot distance between it. Those locations that you saw on the piece of paper were the 11 locations that the various publishers had put as their prior in the list. But like I said, interestingly today, some of these locations only had 1 or 2 current racks that were there. And so I'm not too sure if that's the, to say those are the exact locations, I'm not going to say that today. It's going to have to be worked out. It's going to have to be negotiated and talked to the various publishers and to see what's going to work best for everybody at these various locations. This is indicating, though, and to kind of just let you know, there could be up to around 11 different locations, and there could be more in the future as a need arises. I hope that answered your question.
I just wonder, I mean, I just would hate to think we're starting this and there are already people that can't get in that want to, you know.
Yeah, and that's not the case. We're basically starting from scratch, you know, and we have some parameters saying minimum 400 feet apart. And they're going to have to know that they're going to be paying $75 for each of those locations per year. And that may say to some people, instead of being at 10 locations, maybe I only really need to be at 5 locations. And we want to work it out that we want everybody to be successful. I mean, that's what they want to be, and that's what we would like them to be. We just like to have it more uniform aesthetically.
So just to make sure, Jane's point here, we're going to start off, everybody will have a space that wants a space.
Yes.
And then we'll add to it as the need arises.
Yes.
And who will make those decisions? You or this committee?
The city manager will.
I thought there was a committee that worked together too.
We started with a committee, and the publishers came back and said, this is just getting to be so difficult. We, the city committee, make decisions. We then have to bring those decisions back to city council. City council then, you know, has a couple of readings on making changes. Could we just make it more simpler? And that way we only have to bash one person.
Yeah. Well, they picked a good one.
Well, but then you can tell us when there's a problem, right?
Well, and that's right. You know, if I cannot work it out and changes have to be made, then hopefully 80-90% of these things can be worked out through the city manager, and if changes need to be made, as I've always told you, we could always then come back to you at a later date to work those details out.
All right. Do we have a motion? Second.
So moved.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any further discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously.
I vote against it.
You vote against it.
30 minutes, especially when I guess.
Okay. Item 7, second reading and public hearing of ordinance to approve the Northside Comprehensive Plan.
Okay.
I'll give you a respite.
I'm just kind of surprised from that one. Okay. Where are we at here? Well, I'm sorry. The Northside Plan. Let me read this by title. It's an ordinance amending the City of Aiken Comprehensive Land Use and Transportation Plan. We've been discussing this one again for several years. There's been a tremendous outpouring of support and working with various individuals on developing this plan. It sets the guidelines for City Council and especially even more so for the planning staff and the Planning Commission as to what the future of an area that is larger than 50% of our current area will look like in the future. It's not cast in stone. We know other changes will need to be massaged, but it gives a great deal of guidance to the Planning Commission and staff as to where and what the north side will look like. Again, in generality, this area is from Route 19 to Highway 1, US 1, to just beyond I-20, and it goes on either side of Highway 1 and 19 in various areas. And just to give you an example, if you take Croft Road and the bypass, they both parallel one another, and they go from 19 to, I think it's Vaucluse Road, there is not a connection between those two areas. And the same thing is between 19 and Highway 1. There is only one connector road currently, and that's Rental Pond Road. Through this comprehensive plan and some transportation study efforts that we're going to have to do, we know there's going to have to be more connecting roadways, or we're going to have the same thing as we have on the south side between Silver Bluff and Whiskey, where you only have Doherty Road, and you know you don't have the connectivity. So right away, this plan will help lead us into more discussion, more planning, and making sure that as areas get built and there's more development occurring, it's done in the right way. And so it's the foundation. And upon that foundation, we'll have to build upon it, but it gives you a great starting point. Really appreciate the task force that James Holland headed up, and there's a multitude of others. A lot of meetings went into this. And so we're happy to present to you tonight the ordinance for second reading and public hearing to approve the Northside Comprehensive Plan.
Okay, sir. Thank you.
I just want to say that, you know, the consulting firm that we had, that we used, those are some really nice...
The fine folks.
Right. Really nice people. Mm-hmm.
This is the second reading public hearing of this ordinance to approve the Northside Comprehensive Plan. If anyone in the audience would like to speak on this issue. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. So do we have a motion and second?
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we approve this on second reading.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously.
New business. First item, first reading of an ordinance to amend the election procedures to provide for nonpartisan elections. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. Again, this is an item that City Council has discussed for a long time, and forgive me, I need to read the ordinance title here. This is an ordinance amending City Council election procedures to provide for nonpartisan City Council election. What we're basically saying here is currently we have a partisan election process where there's a primary set out generally in September. Last one was in 07. There will be another one in 09. Republicans gather together and you go ahead and pay a certain fee. You get put on the ballot, and the primary is held in September. Assuming there's a clear-cut winner, they go on to the November election. Occasionally, we'll have a runoff, which I guess the last one we had was
recently.
Well, that was not recently.
No, it was
6 years ago.
Has it been that long?
Yes, it has been. And nonpartisan would be there would not be a Republican or Democratic primary. It would go straight to the general election in November. And you would not be listed as Republican. You would not be listed as Democrat or independent. There would just be a listing of candidates as long as they met the filing deadlines and paid the filing fee. And they would be placed on the ballot. Now, there's two ways that a nonpartisan election procedure could be held. One, City Council tonight could vote on it. And if you vote in the affirmative, then the question, which we have here that says, shall the municipality of Aiken change its method of election of members to City Council from partisan election with a primary to nonpartisan election general, to nonpartisan general election system? That question needs to be sent up to the Justice Department. And they, in turn, would say, well, that sounds reasonable or doesn't. They may have some changes. If we agree with the changes, then we would set a date, and this would be voted on by the citizens of Aiken. Now, you think that our state law would allow us to go ahead and have that election when there's a nice big general election like this November, because then you'd have lots of people vote on it. No, our state is very specific. This has got to be a standalone election period. And that's the state law. We can't change that. So we would set up some Tuesday in May or June or whenever we get the answer back from the state. And it's either positive or negative. Either the voters say, yes, let's go to this system, or we don't go to the system. We don't have a choice in that matter. The only choice we have is that we have to hold the election within so many days after we hear from the Justice Department.
But we wouldn't want to do it in the summertime, would we?
I would hope not. But again, once we start this process, a lot of the timing is going to be based on when the Justice Department gets back to us. And then I believe we have... Well, they have the 60 days response, and then we have 30 to 90 days. So hopefully we could schedule it before school gets out or once school comes back in. Otherwise, people could obviously vote absentee on it, but there are strict deadlines as to how this whole thing plays out.
What will this special election cost us?
Generally, an election, the last time I looked, was maybe about $3,000. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit higher than that.
Excuse me, go ahead, Les.
I didn't realize that it was so cheap to have a special election.
Well, the thing about it is, though, is your chances are, if you're going to widen, I would think it would widen the field of contenders, and so you're pretty much always going to have a runoff. So you would be looking at...
Unless if somebody, you could have three contenders, but you still might get someone getting over 50%. As long as they get over 50%.
Yeah, but I would say that chances are you're probably going to have four or better contenders,
and
then nobody's going to come up with over 50%. So.
Well, but you're still running... You would be running for District 1 City Council, District 2, District 3, District 4, and at large.
That's correct.
So somebody would have to pick which position they're running for, mm-hmm. and they would have to qualify to be running, i.e. have to live in District 3 or right. District 2. So, it would be a major challenge to the at-large, because you probably would get a few extra folks on
the
that.
Last time, the next election is going to be in 2009,
yeah.
and so if this gets approved by you tonight and then gets approved by the voters, this would be established in 2009, and you have, in that case, two at-larges running. But again, they would have to get over 50%, or else there would be another runoff 2 weeks later.
Okay, so if one candidate got more than 50%, that person would be in, and then there'd be a runoff for the other.
That is correct. Okay. Or obviously the district, it's a little bit easier to look at that, because yeah. they stand on their own.
Mm-hmm. And we're proposing this change because we are... There are eight cities that are not...
Well, there are about six cities, really, out of about 286 or some number like that in the state that are partisan. And we're one of them. North Augusta's one. New Ellington is one. And I don't know, Windsor or Wagner, maybe.
They're mainly in this area.
Yeah. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. I personally don't think it's going to be a problem in getting this passed, no matter how many people vote.
I personally don't support it. That's my personal feeling. For multiple reasons, I cannot support this.
May I ask a couple of questions? Mm-hmm. Who will pay for the actual election itself?
The special election?
No, the election of council members. We don't run on the same year as
No, we run on the odd year.
We run on the odd years. Mm-hmm. Which means that if you don't have parties, you would still...
Right. The primaries are always paid for by the Republican-Democratic parties. The general election that we always hold in November is paid by the city. So that's not going to change. Now, if there's a runoff, then we'll have two costs.
I think maybe the answer there is that the people running are going to pay something to file the honor of running.
What do you think the filing fee would be? That would be my first question.
Sarah and I have talked a little bit about that, but we feel it needs to be reasonable, so that if you're going to do this, you're not going to go ahead and stop people
yeah.
from
I mean, to me, that's one of the reasons for doing this, is so more people feel like they can be candidates.
We'll end up saving money in the long run, because I think you won't have as many primaries. You won't have the primaries in both parties.
But in the past, you pay your money. We paid the money to run in the primary, and then I didn't pay anything to run in the general election, right?
Because the seat.
The city paid for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And Democrats used a caucus, so there wasn't an expense there, and then the city paid for the election, right?
No, sometimes we have.
But anyway, so now we're going to have some donation to the cost of that.
But again, we have
not come up
with an exact cost, but I personally believe if you're going to go this way, it has to be reasonable so that you don't.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Not allow someone to go into it.
Yeah.
Whether it's 50, 100, 150, it's the money's not to make money, it's to make sure they're serious.
Yeah, I think we paid what the party originally when I ran 6 years ago, I think was $295.
Try $460.
No, that's I knew it had gone up.
Yeah, that's what I paid. $460.
Well, I paid $800 because the party didn't have any money.
And see, that's happening, yeah.
But then keep in mind, too, as I understand the law, if whenever we would set this election, it would it be in September to allow for a runoff?
Again, once we hear from the Justice Department, then we have 30, no,
no
less
I'm,
than 30.
I'm sorry, million. I don't mean that election. I mean, let's say everything is approved, and now it's November 2009. Would we have an election in September 2009?
No, it'd be November... The first Tuesday in November of 2009.
And then if there was a runoff, it would be...
Two weeks later.
Okay.
So, yeah, more than likely, the city will be paying for two elections.
Yeah. I think there's some good examples out there. There's so many cities doing it already that we can learn from that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot we don't know about this, but...
I would like to... know if we could open this up to possibly some discussions from the audience tonight. I see a couple of people that may want to address.
Oh, certainly. Is there someone here who would like to speak on this issue?
Clearly. Who's what?
I don't see anybody wants to do. Okay, let's suspend the rules then.
Okay.
I make a motion we suspend the rules.
Second.
Okay.
So moved.
Okay. Everybody in favor of suspending the rules to allow? Okay, sir. Yeah.
Next item.
And we're also going to, next item, we're going to change this thing or start to change it.
I was just prepared for first read, just a lesson, so. I'm not really at all.
That's okay, John. Go ahead. Just tell us what
you want. My name is John Brecht. As a citizen of Aiken City and also the chairman of the Aiken County Democratic Party, I don't see any good reason to change at this time. The primary election, I agree. You eliminate a primary election, you're going to open up the possibility of runoffs every time. So there is no net gain with eliminating the primary election. On kind of big picture items, to partisan elections are a keystone to our democracy. It's been in place for centuries, and to throw it away, I just don't understand any real purpose to do that. The system works as it is, as it, you know, does now. By eliminating partisan politics, you basically eliminate the party from local elections. You are relegating the county parties to only statewide and national elections, thereby eliminating a whole group of people from the debate, the local debate, and the whole process, which is the party. There are a lot of people in the county that are involved in politics on both sides, unfortunately more on the Republican side than the Democratic side at this time, but all the same, they are people that are engaged in their politics, engaged in their government on all levels, and to eliminate them from the local process, I think would be a great disservice.
John?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, don't they, excuse me. Aren't they likely to get involved no matter what process you have?
Let me speak to that next, yes.
Okay.
A very wise man said, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if someone that doesn't have the courage to take a political stand and to vote by that or to run on that courage may not have the courage to make the difficult decisions. As a voter, I would not want my candidates, if it encourages involvement, I think it would be encouraging the wrong kind of involvement. I wouldn't want to see my candidates get involved because they're hiding behind a veil of political anonymity. That's just spineless to me. And I don't think that is the proper course to take. So without that courage, they don't have the courage, I think, demonstrated courage, to make some difficult decisions. So that, I don't buy the it'll encourage involvement. I think it'll encourage the wrong kind of involvement. I would rather have a bold candidate making a stand on his convictions, his political beliefs, and standing up and running under that.
And you don't think that would happen? You've still got your candidates that are going to apply.
Well,
now, get me wrong.
I don't
have a side on this issue. I think it's a very good issue to talk about, and it wasn't my suggestion to bring it up to start with. But I don't understand that the people would not be as involved. They wouldn't get out there and talk. The paper would be involved. I see the paper getting more involved, actually, because you've got more people probably signing up to run.
People would be involved,
yep.
But it would be maybe on a wink, wink, nod, nod basis. Oh, I'm not a Republican, but I'm a Republican. That's clouds the issues, I think, and it also eliminates a certain level of accountability in a way. That someone that's elected under any particular party is accountable to that party as well as to the electorate. So you're also eliminating possibly a level of accountability that maybe is a good thing to have. Those are my, and again, unrehearsed feelings on the topic. I'm sorry if I'm
not there. Thank you for those. Thank you for those.
I was waiting for the second read.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
back.
I think that I guess it was 6 years ago when you first ran.
Yeah.
But this issue came up, and
this is where
I guess when Jane ran the first time, I remember it coming up at a forum. And I believe I may even have asked the question.
I think that was the last election, actually, Beverly, over at Schofield.
Yeah.
I think one
no,
of the
it's,
things.
No, it's been longer than that.
We talked about it before,
okay.
But you asked me that question in a forum at Schofield High School.
Yeah, it's come up.
Yes.
It's come up many times in the past.
I just I guess knowing that that what John said has a lot of truth and merit, I did see it another way. I kind of thought maybe since I'm so much of a free spirit, I thought that maybe there were other people who would run. And you wouldn't have to worry. Well, I don't worry about a platform anyway. You know, I just have my convictions, my personal convictions, and that's what sustains me. But I didn't think it mattered. But I do understand what you're saying. There are some other issues, and it has to do with the way people vote. And voting is difficult at best for a lot of people, especially those that are visually handicapped or otherwise don't understand the voting process and they're used to voting a certain way. This might prove challenging. But I would like to see us pass this on first reading and have an open discussion about it at the next meeting to see what other people may have. Because you did not come prepared, and I hate to put you on the spot when I ask. When I said that to the mayor about people wanting to speak, but I think there may be other people who are waiting for the second hearing as well, and I'd like to give them that.
Well, I agree. I'm sure there are people out there who want to talk about this issue.
Yeah, if I could just make a comment. I talked to your counterpart, Andy O'Byrne, today, and he probably would have said just about exactly what you said, that he supports the partisan, keeping the partisan nature of it, for the idea of developing candidates and so forth. So I would, out of respect to the fact that he can't be here tonight, at least pass his comments on. So I agree we ought to at least go to second reading.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
May I ask a question?
You certainly can.
The fees normally go to the party. Mm-hmm. Would this now be go to the city, and we would lose those fees. Not that we make a lot of money from people filing on the Democratic side, but will the city then take those fees
yes.
away from the party?
If you want to go ahead and give us a contribution, we might be able to work out something. No, the fees would go ahead to the city since we're
right.
going to pay for the elections.
Okay.
So the Democratic and Republican Party would no longer be getting any fees for filing for those elections.
But you didn't run primaries anyway, did you? You were doing caucuses where you didn't spend any money, right?
Right. Right.
That meant I got it.
Well, I think there's a lot we don't know still about the financing aspect of this thing. Certainly, the city's not looking to make money on this.
Ms. Mayor, I think there's a comment here.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Would you come up, please, and tell us your name and all? And
P.J. Causey, 1125 Alderman Street. All of you, either Republican or Democrat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think you really should have a say in this? Shouldn't the voters say something?
They will. That's the purpose of the ordinance. What they're doing is they're voting to, if they approve the ordinance, then a referendum will come to the voters,
yeah.
and the voters will have the right to say whether they want to do it that way or the other way.
We're discussing really to give them a chance, the people to give a chance to vote on this issue.
Okay. Well, anyway, as I see on the news and other, well, on the news mostly, that majority of people nowadays are tired of the Republican Party and Democratic Party both. And I, for one, am, but I just had my affiliation stopped. I'm now independent because I can't stand either party and what they're trying to do. People like me now who are independent don't have a chance because who's going to back us if we want to run for councilman or whoever?
Nobody. That's right.
So I don't think it's right that you'd exclude other people who have a right to their own opinions and their own minds.
We wouldn't be excluding, though.
Well,
they could hop in there themselves. Anybody could be in the running.
She's talking about if we kept it the same.
Oh, if we kept, I'm sorry.
Yes.
How does
an independent get into it without having someone backing them?
They file as an independent.
You ever seen one on the ballot yet?
Yes.
We had write-ins against me.
Just had one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let me say this to you.
They could have been on the ballot, but they didn't get enough votes to get on the ballot.
That's the thing. They don't have the party backing them.
Yes.
No, they have people backing them, but not the party.
He was a petition candidate.
Let me mention something else to you that may put your mind at ease about this. You ask what kind of say should we have since we all are partisan. Also, in addition to us deliberating this, if 15% of the residents sign a petition, they could bring this forward themselves. They don't have to wait for us to do this. This is something that if independents wanted to get together and sign a petition, they can petition. And I don't know where it goes from there. Does it still go to the Justice Department?
Goes
to the Justice Department, and if they approve it, then the election is held. So us turning it down, if that's what happens eventually, doesn't mean that someone in the community can't get a petition started and bring it back to the table.
And how much is 15% of the population needed?
15% of the
We think there's 18,000
15% of 22.
I think it's registered voters, is it not?
It's about
it's registered voters, not individuals, just registered voters, and I don't know what that number
about
is.
About 25 to 2,700 signatures is what you'd need.
So who's going to back that? Who's going to get the money to do that?
Take the money to do that.
You would have to spend any more than what it would take for paper to do that, because it would just mean collecting signatures of registered voters. So no matter what we do with this, there's still an option for you to bring this forward if that is your wish. And I'm not saying it won't pass next time. I'm just saying that your question about why we're doing it is that we're trying to get it to the ballot. If it doesn't make it to the ballot and you want to bring it forward, you can do a petition and get it brought forward. So there is a way to do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Thank you, PJ. Is anyone else? Yes, sir. Jeff?
I'm Jeff Beckham, 188 Governor Lane. I'd be in favor of doing away with the parties. I think that would, I think parties get in the way of discussion, and for example,